I respect the official notebook.
Well, I'm going to be honest. You start appreciating things a little bit, like things you wouldn't normally appreciate, like a fine leather-bound notebook. You really start to appreciate it when you get older.
Yeah.
I'm starting to appreciate things a little bit more, things that I normally didn't care about.
I don't think I've carried a notebook since school in 20 years.
Yeah. I tried to get used to all the digital notebooks. I've tried so hard. But I can't seem to get the ideas and the sections and everything like that the way that I want. And it doesn't feel the same as when I'm, as when I'm actually able to write my thoughts down and keep track of things. I don't know. It's like a weird, the tangibility of like having something in your hand versus just everything digital. It's just I'm on that cusp where everyone started doing digital notebooks and then the last generation was doing all regular paper notebooks.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm right on that edge and I could never get used to the digital.
You also have beautiful handwriting.
Do I? No, yeah, I don't. Well, absolutely not. No shot.
Bad, yeah. Well, there was a guy this morning doing an intake paperwork. He's 60, 65 years old, runs a very successful business. I needed his no-fault paperwork. I said, bro, how did you even get through kindergarten? It was just complete scribble over the whole...
Well, that's my signature. My signature is just complete chicken scratch. I mean, they go, oh, yeah, just sign here. And I literally just go... Like, just whatever I got to do just to get the signature on there. I don't know. I also used to hold the fucking pen like this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which is like the stupidest way you could ever hold a pen. I used to hold it like this. So now I'm actively trying to, and as you can see, I got like a calligraphy pen too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to use sharper tip pens, keep my handwriting from not looking horrible. So it's like, I'm trying to do everything I can to be good with writing.
We'll see. I don't know. One day I wonder if my kids, I don't even think they learn script and
no.
Are they? I don't think they do. And then they were trying to teach me one day they're asking me how to sign their name.
Yeah.
I said, just whatever you want to sign it. But yeah, I think in the future, I don't know if people will be writing anything on paper.
No, my mom said that she was, Kenji just next to you. My mom said that she was one of the last ones to start, like, she still signs everything in cursive. I go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I go, what do you send letters by pigeon and cat and all that still too?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that, what's nice, my kids go away to sleepaway camp.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever went. I didn't go myself.
Never.
But what's great there is no electronics. It's just letters. They can write you a letter every day. You know, my kids are pretty good. They write a lot of letters.
Yeah.
And so it forces them to do that.
I mean, it's good because you get out of the habit of just relying on technology for everything. And that's, it's something that can be leveraged not only for business, but for ease of everyday life and to have more success with certain things. But at the same time, it kind of pulls you away from being a human and the analog feel of life.
Yeah.
And the more digital, I mean, I say it all the time. I want to get rid of the BMW I have and I want to get a Toyota 4Runner. And there's just something really cool about having actual climate control buttons and knobs that you turn and touch and this and that, instead of all everything's just a touchscreen. I'm so tired of just everything's a touchscreen. There's no life to it. It's just like you feel like you're just pushing on glass, and if it doesn't work, then you're sitting there and you gotta reboot shit and you gotta do this and that. But like buttons, you have that tactile feel.
Yeah, that is true. I'm constantly rebooting the Tesla.
Oh yeah?
Screen.
Do you like the Tesla?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah?
Although somebody, literally right before I left, the last patient I was working on, she's does sales for BMW.
Okay.
So she was overhearing me talk, and she's like, you have a Tesla? I hate electric. I was like, it's very convenient for me.
Yeah, it's just chilling.
I go from my house to the gym to the office, which is all within the same mile radius, and back home. And then I drive my kids around to sports, so plug it in once or twice a week, and it's like a golf cart.
And what, you got the supercharger that's at the house?
Yep.
Okay.
You got to have the charger. Originally, I actually got the car from my brother, bought it from him. I was like, oh, do I really need the charger? I'll just go to the superchargers by, in Plainview. Once in a while, he's like, no, you have to have the charger in the house. You can't have that car without having the charger in the house. Way too inconvenient.
Yeah, I was looking at getting the, what is it? The electric Mustang, but it's like a SUV. It's not actually a Mustang.
Yeah.
And I drove it. It was really nice. It was cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about that just sounds off.
Yeah.
Electric Mustang.
So truth be told, I don't want an electric car. I really don't. I don't want an electric car. I love gas-powered cars. I really miss my S5. My S5 was amazing. I mean, and it was manual, so it was big V8. It was manual transmission. It was so much fun. So you really got that feel of the car itself.
Yeah.
But my thing is, I don't want to go electric yet because I know they're going to make us at some point eventually. Like, you're going to have to go electric, and they're just not going to make any cars that...
Biden's plan, right?
Yeah, that's fucking everybody who claims that the world is ending tomorrow, but they all have houses on the shores.
Right.
It's like, all right, guys, whatever.
Once everything is electric, then they were saying that the grid's going to overload.
Oh, well, not only is the grid going to overload, but they could shut your ass down whenever the fuck they want. Instead of you having gas canisters.
That may be what they want.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Yeah, but hey, coincidences, right? Why would that actually happen? But I can't buy into the electric thing yet, number one. Number two, I have an apartment. So I was trying to think of like what you were saying. Maybe I'll just go to the superchargers. Maybe I'll just go and charge it up and that's fine. I'll just do it like that maybe once or twice a week. But it's like on the days that I plan on going, maybe life throws me curveballs, which it does every day. So then I won't be able to get there and I won't be able to charge.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll forget that I have to actually drive somewhere more than like 5-10 minutes, and I'll forget to charge the night before. And then it's like, uh-oh.
Start sweating.
Yeah. It's either I'm cutting it close or I have to go to the superchargers. And then, but it works. I do love the car.
Yeah. They're cool, man. They got a lot of features. I love the big touchscreen in the middle, even though we were just talking about hating touchscreens. I do love the big touchscreen in the middle because you can watch movies and you can stack it the way that you want. Shit like that's cool.
Interestingly enough, before that Tesla, for about 14, 15 years, I was driving around in a Honda Accord.
Oh, man.
Just beating it to the ground. And I used to just listen to AM radio. And then when I switched to the Tesla, I'm like, all right, let me put the AM radio on. Not realizing you can't get AM radio in the Tesla.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do I find that? Then I finally figured out. My brother's like, no, you gotta use Spotify. That's the way to go. And then once I switched to Spotify is when I kind of got into listening to podcasts. I started listening to Joe Rogan. I was like, let me see what this Joe Rogan's all about. So I liked him. And then that's when Jamal started telling about you. I heard he was going on your podcast. I don't know if it was before I met you or after I met you.
I think it was before. I hadn't come to you guys for treatment yet because I know Jamal was going to you guys for a while for treatment, and I always saw you beating the shit out of him with your iron hands.
A while is an understatement. I started working with him years ago out of my garage.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, way back.
The glow up is real.
And that's a good story of how we first met. But anyway...
You were listening to podcasts, Spotify, and everything.
No, I've been playing. I'm honored to be here. Love seeing you in this space because I know you were talking about it for a while. Just like we took the walk, and you mentioned some of the things you went through, possibly getting the other space.
Yeah.
So huge congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate you, man. Listen, everything is and we're gonna go over just like your background and what got you to the road that you're currently on now and. You know, everything's a process. That's what it comes down to. And it's like there are things that are thrown at you left and right that you think are going to be, you know, not end game or world breaker type situations, but they fuck you up for a little bit. And it sucks because...
I've actually had a lot of those situations, but when you look at them afterwards, basically every time that situation where I was so angry, so upset, I can't believe this didn't work out. I can't believe that fell through. It was like, wow, that was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
That happened, you know, multiple times for me. So.
Yeah. And you learn from them. You know, these are things that over the years, I probably haven't had as many as other people, but anytime that there has been something that has set me back or thrown a curveball my way and made me change the route of my life and things were never the same after that. During it, you think of it like, oh, this is the shit. Like, this is the pits. What are we doing? Like, I thought everything was going to be great and this and that. And now I got to deal with this. And you're almost in a space of just irritation. And I can't even see the other side of what I'm dealing with right now. But then all of a sudden, 2 years later, 3 years later, 4 years later, you look back and you go, holy shit. Yeah,
that actually was meant to be.
Yeah. That's not only was it meant to be, but it developed me. It changed me. It helped me into the person that I am today. And it's just kind of crazy how everybody has those trials throughout their life. And, you know, like you were just saying that you've had a bunch of them. I would love to hear some of those, but I do want to start more so as a little intro, which I don't normally do, but I do want to start as an intro. I appreciate you taking the time to come sit down with me because I know how busy not only your schedule is, but you guys are slammed over at the practice, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, like I said, appreciate to be here, but I had to, you know, stop at a dime of what I was doing,
yeah,
give directions to Dan and Basil and everybody, the person I was working with, just so I could, you know, what they need to finish up with so I get out and be here on time.
And that means a lot to me, for real.
Because, and it was worth it because we had a great walk.
Yeah, we had a great walk and we're having a great podcast so far. So that's
100%.
We're getting right in the right direction. So
I got a little sidetracked with that story with the Tesla, but really what I wanted to transition to was that, you know, I started listening to your podcast. And, you know, obviously really enjoyed it because I like to listen to Joe Rogan, although he's had some people on that show that I have worked with, like Aljo was on a few times, mm-hmm. You know, a few of the other UFC fighters. But
have you worked on Sarah?
No.
We got to get Matt over to you. He would definitely love to.
Carol was just in yesterday. She's an instructor there for known Matt for 20 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if you don't. Yeah, but anyway, she was saying his wife was Aiken from getting ready to fight.
Yeah, his wife is really awesome. She's great.
Gave her our info about you know, reaching out to come in for a session. But anyway, what I was saying was, yeah, I listened to the show. You know, I like, obviously, Jamal, Andre. You had Mike and Mike on, two of my favorite guys. I mean, these are all my, you know, people that I just feel lucky. I'd say lucky and blessed to somehow come into my life as loyal clients that really, you know, help grow my business and just, you know, the great people.
Yeah.
So listen to them, you know, feels just like I enjoy listening to that in my car now. And two of your biggest fans are my boys.
Yeah. Big Nick was on.
Yep. Big Nick, we were listening to that with them in the car. They're like, you know, they would just start laughing. Like, they're like, who's talking? Is that Big Nick, the big unit? Like, yeah. And he's on Nick's show. Remember you met Nick at the fight. And they were just cracking up listening. You know, Nick was talking about having big legs and high shorts. They're like, yeah. So they're like, we listened to most of the episode. We get in the car the other day. They're like, can we hear it again? I was like, guys, I love the Knicks, but I'm not listening to reruns of the podcast show. I'm sorry.
That's awesome. maybe they could watch the video and they could see Nick's face next time.
Yeah. That was a funny story when we saw you at the space.
That dude was so tight, man, in front of me.
Yo, a lot of people very tight at that.
Everyone's got to relax. It's not serious.
I was going to say, I got so excited. I'm driving in, pulling my boys. I see you. I'm like, oh, shit, it's Rizzles. It's got to be Rizzles. That's his plate.
Yeah, your plate.
I'm honking. And then the guy, the pickup in front of you, I see he sticks his hat out like, what the fuck are you honking
right at me? I'm like, I said, bro, I didn't even know it was you yet. I said, bro, it's not me. What are you yelling at me for? I'm sitting here on my phone chilling.
So I got out. I said, I apologize. We apologized. I said, I was just excited to see my friend. I'm sorry. And he was like, still a little angry.
Yeah, he was salty. No, he was salty. He was salty. It's okay.
And then that was a great fight. But even, you know, it was fun hanging out together also. My boys, you know, liked hanging out with you.
They were great. Great kids, man.
Nick. But like you said, I'm walking through the crowd with my kids. You know, whenever I'm out with my kids, I got my, you know, eyes on them like a hawk.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in a crowd like that, I just want to, you know, make sure I'm looking at them. I'm not looking at the fight or anybody else. All of a sudden, because I'm focused on them, I didn't really see where I was walking. Somebody, like, bangs shoulders with me, like another guy, you know, gives me, like, a, you know, a hard look. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm just following my kids. He's like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, but it's like...
Everyone's all up in arms. Right? Y'all got to relax.
I didn't even want to take them there because I felt like it could be that kind of atmosphere, but... You know, it was fine, but, you know, it's like, again, why are people so angry?
I think people are just, I think it has a lot to do with the environment of the world as of late. There's a lot of just bullshit going on everywhere. Things are so expensive. Life is hard for a lot of people. Way more than it has been in the last 10 years, let's say, 15 years. It's a different type of hard now. And I think that just a lot of people are just consuming so much negative content on a daily basis that they're just miserable in general. Now, throw into the wrench when you're at a fight. Atmosphere like that, everybody like peacocks. They want to puff their fucking chest out. It's like, bro, relax. It's not that serious. Everything's gonna be all right.
Yeah.
I had a kid yesterday. I get into shit in Huntington. I'm like the village friend. Everybody says hi to me and Kenji. We're like, hey, you know, like I love everybody in town.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm walking down New York Ave, and it's just like this heavy set kid in a hoodie. You can just tell he's like a little. He just looks like he's just looking for a problem. And I'm walking with Kenji. Kenji's sniffing the tree, whatever. And he's behind us. He's probably about 20 yards behind us, 15 yards behind us. And he starts going, hey, you, Don't you walk away from me. Don't walk away from me. He's going like that. And I'm looking around. There's really nobody near me, like near us.
Yeah.
So I'm looking around like, is he talking to
this
me?
This guy's
like,
talking to me.
What the fuck is he saying? Like, I'm looking at Kenji. Kenji's not even paying any attention. So then I look back at him and he looks like right through me. I'm like, whatever. So I turn around and he just goes again. Hey, hey, you. You, yeah, you. Fucking walk away from me. Fucking walk away from me. So I turn around and he like is right near me now. So I turn around to him and I go, talking to me? Like just like that. No, not a negative tone, nothing. I just very neutral. I just said, are you talking to me? Like maybe he is, maybe he isn't. And he looks at me, looks me up and down. He goes, talking to my friend over there. He goes, the fuck, right in my face. And I just look at him and I just go, it's not even worth it, man. Like, what am I going to say to this fucking kid? Well, I'm going to say something back to him. Then we're going to get involved. Like, he's not even worth me wasting my breath on somebody like that. So he just, and then he kept walking. And then as he's walking, he goes, you got motherfuckers thinking that I'm talking to them. I'm telling you, his boy was so far down the block. The way that he was saying it, he would have never heard anyway. So he was being a douche. He was trying to see what if I was going to say something to him because he was trying to just like, say something to me, but not, and then be able to blame it like he was talking to his friend. People are just assholes.
You at least you came back and like Robert De Niro, you talking to me?
Yeah, I was just like,
I would have just kept. Well, I got no.
That's what I did. Well, I asked him. I said, "Are you talking to me?" And then he's like, "The fuck? No, I'm talking to my friend." I go, "Okay," and I just kept walking. Whatever. Like, what's gonna happen? Like, Kenji's gonna bite his leg. I'm gonna beat the shit out of this guy on the street, and then I got to deal with legal ramifications because Buddy's an asshole. I'd rather just ignore those people, even the guy in the truck in front of us. I'm not beeping at you, bro. Relax. It's not that serious. What, are we going to throw fists because somebody beeped at you?
Yeah.
Get a smaller truck, asshole, if you don't know how to drive it. It's okay. We're going to get through it.
He couldn't park the car.
He couldn't park for shit. Somebody's got to, you know, that's what they got to start doing. They got to start giving lessons. If you buy a pickup truck and you're you know, you've never had one before, we need to teach you not only how to back that thing in, but to be able to pull into a spot effectively so you don't look like an asshole like that. But people are just, like you're saying, people are mad. It's the climate of the world. Everyone's just got to just...
Yeah.
Just relax, man. It's not that serious. We're all going to get through it. Have a cold. Actually, don't have a cold brew because that's caffeine. You get people even more crazy. Just everybody caffeinated and angry.
You're drinking the cold brew. I know you're not drinking any booze.
Not drinking any booze, no. Not since March.
I'm a fan. I listen. I know.
Yeah.
I know what's going on.
Not since March. I feel really good that I haven't. And especially going through like not mental illness hurdles, but just mentality wise, you know, with business and just being an entrepreneur, you just deal with the waves of just emotions. So it's like, especially not having any alcohol and not having any drugs, not doing anything like that, and just honing all of my extra free time into jiu-jitsu and weight training. I mean, I couldn't even imagine if I was drinking because that just makes you even more upset at life and everything like that. So I just want to be able to just...
Yeah, just a distraction.
Yeah, even keeled. I mean, I don't know. Do you drink at all?
I do, yeah. I mean, generally, well, at nighttime, I'll have a little bit of bourbon. That's what I like, but...
A little nightcap.
That's it.
That was considered nightcap?
Yeah, I drink that and just pass out.
Yeah.
Somebody said, I was in the sauna this morning at Lifetime, and one of the guys is like, you know, just they, you know, pretty much know a lot of people at Lifetime. They all know what I do. They know about the business, the physical therapy. They're like, he was saying how, you know, he pays for a Lifetime through his firm. I guess, you know, he works for either a big law firm or finance firm in the city. So just to kind of get under his skin, I was like, oh, must be nice. Must be nice to have that big fancy job and packages and everything you get. He's like, oh, look who's talking. You got self-employed. That must be nice. And, you know, it's going on. And he's like, you could do whatever you want. And he's trying to just get back at me. And then he's like, but in all seriousness, I know, you know, I respect the fact that you, you know, you employ people, you give people jobs. You know, that's saying something. That's something to be proud of. He's like, me, he's like, I don't know, you know, going to sleep at night, you know, just with that kind of stress that, you know, if you mess up or something happens and that, you know, nobody's getting paid. And I was like, well, yes, that's true. But also that's why I drink.
So I take a couple slugs every night.
Take a slug, 9:30, 9 o'clock, then I'm out. And I don't think about those things.
You know, it's interesting because I'm at that point where I'm about to try to start looking to take on some people to help out with some of the business because I have a lot of business right now.
Just from looking at this setup, I would say that would be smart.
Yeah. And it helps, man, because I can't be everywhere at once. I can't be everywhere and edit at the same time. And I've always enjoyed coaching people up, but I just want to coach the right people up. I don't want to help somebody out, teach them how to do things, and then they're trying to steal clients from me on the back end. Not that my clients would go with them, but you know, it's just the hassle and headache of having to deal with a snake that I just don't want to deal with. So I want to coach up.
Got to find the right people.
That's what I'm saying. I want to coach up the right people. So
you see the people at our spot.
Oh, great people. All A1.
All the right people. I would trust them with anything.
Yeah, and it's a tough transition going from just being in the mindset of handling everything yourself to then taking people on, because like you're saying, not only now I have to pay them, there's payroll involved, there's making sure that they're treating your clients, you know, the exact way that you've treated your clients over the year to build your reputation and business up. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just like, oh, let me just hire some people and get them in.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, I experienced that myself.
Yeah.
Tough position to kind of take that leap. It's again, another reason why.
I was waiting for you to put it over. What'd you get?
I brought you a gift. So
yes.
Let me read it here. No great thing is created suddenly. I mean, it's pretty obvious. You know, we all know what that means. But my uncle actually got this for me when I started working out of my garage years ago. And I used to keep it up right on the wall, right by the treatment table. So I was in that room, garage room, just working on person after person after person by myself. I really didn't have a plan or goal, like where I was going with what I was doing, but I would just look at the sign and be like, oh, well, we'll see what happens, but I'm here now, but I know, you know, can't be great right away. Yeah. You just got to start somewhere.
It takes time.
I like the vibe you got here. We got the Blockbuster sign. Smooth seas never made a skilled sailor.
That's it.
Love it. Yeah.
The harder you work, the luckier you get.
That's another great one.
Yeah.
I think this adds right to the...
I appreciate you bestowing this upon me. And the fact that your uncle gave this to you and this was hanging in your spot, that means way more to me than just you giving me something.
My uncle's very close to me. He still comes in for PT right now.
I'm not right there for now. It's amazing. I appreciate you.
I figured you could just, you know, look at that while you're here, because I just always, again, fan of your podcast. I listen to, you're always playing the long game.
Yeah.
Right? You know, what you're doing now is a build up to what you're doing 10 years from now. You can't just have one or two, three podcasts and be like, oh, now I'm Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
whether you get that point or not, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just, you know, playing the long game.
I appreciate you, for real.
So I was always listening to you say that. And that was actually in the office basement since I moved to the new space for 2 years now. So I was like, you know what? I didn't hang it up because I just felt, not because I feel like, oh, I made it to this great space now and I don't need that sign. I just didn't fit the vibe of the office. Now we got the fighters on the wall. We got all the people that have come in on the wall. So I wasn't sure where to put it. I said, it's been sitting in the basement. Let me, I think it fits here perfectly.
Vibe is immaculate. It fits in perfectly. I really do appreciate that. I'm going to figure out where I'm going to hang it up. I love things that just keep you driven and keep you going mentally. These little sayings.
When my uncle got it from me, I was like, he always buys me interesting, I would say weird things. My wife would attest to that. She'll probably laugh when she hears me telling this story. And, you know, he gave me that sign. I said, oh, it's a cool sign. Just throw it up in the room. Why not? And then I didn't really think about the sign, even though, like I said, it makes sense. No great thing is created suddenly.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious, but, you know, just kept looking at it all. When it just stares you in the face while I'm in this room working for 10 to 12 hours straight. I'm like, all right, you know, starting to just, I'd say it inspired me a little bit.
I know you said that it's obvious, but I feel like it's not obvious to a lot of people because, you know, especially with the dawn of social media and everybody just posting their wins on a consistent basis.
Now everybody is an expert overnight.
Yeah. They don't think that it takes time to build something awesome. And that's an unfortunate thing, but it's a fortunate thing in a lot of ways because, let's say on a podcast, most people don't even get past their fifth episode. Most people don't get past their 10th. Wow. I mean, they just give up because they don't get 1,000 views an episode right out the gate. I mean, it takes time for all of this stuff. Even this, and what I'm finding now is that I'm putting so much time into the YouTube, making sure that I'm getting content out on the YouTube side of things, that my audio is like where my YouTube used to be. So my audio used to be the main way that I had listens. To be honest with you, I used to get like 400, 500, 600 listens an episode on average. And then
I think that's pretty good,
which is great. I mean, for somebody who's not famous and
I don't really know what, I have nothing to compare that to. I'm so out of that space.
I think those are pretty good numbers. But then when I'd have like an Andre on or Sabrina when she came on, or those would be a couple, Aaron Banks
people.
Yeah. And, you know, they put the episode out and it becomes more circulated and shared, and those would get thousands. So that I always was, you know, blessed about that. But now the opposite's happening. My audio is down in listens, but my YouTube is going through the roof. So like I think I'm up something like almost 100 subscribers in a week right now. Nice. Like my total watch time, current like total views is over like 35,000 for the last week and shit like that. So by putting out shorts and being strategic with the times that I'm placing the content out there, full episodes, shorter clips of full episodes, I'm really diving into YouTube because I know that's the long game. And that's where I want to grow, because like you said, Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize Joe Rogan's been podcasting since the late 2000s.
It makes sense. It's like 3,000 episodes or something.
Yeah, but you know, they look at the number and they don't really they just see that he does a bunch of episodes a week, but they don't really think about, holy shit, like 3,000, 2,000, whatever he's up to. It's like that's far more than what you'd be able to do in a year, even if he's banging out one a week. You know, 365 episodes, if he's banging out one every day.
Yeah.
365 episodes a year. So you start looking at that 3,000. Oh, this dude's been doing it for a minute.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, but that also attests to the success rate of staying consistent, keeping your head in the game. I'm sure when you first started, there weren't really any listens.
And it's also a skill.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be doing what you're doing.
I couldn't do what you're doing. I mean, I could maybe if I had the training, but you got those iron hands, man. I need 10 times the more grip strength for that.
I agree. You can't.
No, well, I'll tell you right now, you can't do it.
But yeah, and I'm aware that I can't, you know, do what you're doing.
That's okay. So let's
find it impressive.
But we both just do what we do, and then we collab in the middle. And
actually, last week I told Owen. Have you met Owen at the office?
Yes. I'm gonna feel like an asshole if I have met him and I just didn't realize the name.
Anyway, I was, you know, I'll tell him I was coming on next week or whatever. He's like, "Well, are you nervous?" I said, "Not really." I said, "But you would think I was, because I'm well aware that I do tend to mumble at times. You know, don't speak so clearly. Sometimes I ramble on. But like I was telling you before, I went on one podcast before. Didn't love how I sounded. It was more. It was a PT." And she, you know, wanted to speak with a physical therapist, outpatient business owner that kind of works in a hybrid model of insurance and self-pay and, you know, deals with a lot of athletes. So I was like, boom, I could, you know, that's me.
Cool.
I'll go on. But then when I listened to some replays of the episode again, I said, you know, I didn't love how I sounded.
Yeah.
Could have been the setup, like you said, we did it over FaceTime. But now, you know, I got another chance at it.
Yeah. Listen, virtual ones are tough because you don't get to look at the person directly in the eye. You don't get to, like, have the microphone right in front of you where it sounds crystal clear. I mean, the setup alone is a couple $1,000s worth of, at least, at the minimum, in setup quality. So, you know. But
way, way more intimate.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to light candles.
You don't have the roses left over?
No, I don't have the roses that Nick brought me. He was awesome, man. He showed up. I went, those are not for me. Stop it.
Yeah, I absolutely love that kid.
He's really a heart of gold, man. He messaged me last night because I got another stripe on the white belt. He was like, dude, I'm so happy for you, this and that. I said, I appreciate you, bro. Little baby steps in the right direction.
Yeah. I'll tell you a quick story about him. You know, he and I know he's going to be listening. Shout out to Nick.
Shout out, Nick.
Yeah. The big unit.
Yeah.
Dr. Big Unit.
Dr. Big Unit, whose shorts just ride up so high.
Yeah, so these shirt. Another gift I brought you is the office shirt.
Fire, love it.
You didn't have one, did you?
I haven't had one. Nope.
I brought you a large because you're looking lean.
Oh, thank you.
I'm wearing a schmedium myself.
Oh, listen, man.
No, this is actually a large too.
No, it's not.
Mine? No, it is.
I'll show you the tag.
I'll show you the tag. I do wear a large.
Well, you got the physique that you go wear a medium.
Yeah. No, a lot of times the medium's just way too tight.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't want to be that tight.
We'll get a couple more views if you rock the medium.
I'll just take the shirt off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just like midway through the episode, somebody skims through it, all of a sudden you're just shirtless. What the fuck happened? We got to go back. It's just been naked now.
Yeah, so I know Nick mentioned it quickly on the podcast when he came on, but he and I hit it off right away. He was rocking a different pair of retro Jordans that were just like classics. So he was getting on my good side. And then, you know, he was there for a week. He came in very humble. Wasn't saying like, oh, I could do this, I could do that. But I could tell he was, you know, definitely very knowledgeable, very skillful, connected really well with all our, you know, patients and clients. So, you know, let him get at it. And, you know, he's been doing great ever since. But he, literally, I never asked him to. He was there for like 3 or 4 days. He's like, take a look at this. I'm like, what do you want to show me? He's like, made this and like did it in like a day.
Yeah.
He's like, you like it? I'm like, yeah, bro, I love it. That's insane. You just made this in like a day? He's like, yeah, I figured it'd be perfect. Perfect for, you know, the vibe of the office. Made the shirts and you really, you know, the rest is history. He's, you know, still making new shirts.
He's very proactive. He likes to do things and to help the outreach and do different things, which is good. You need that. You need that in the office.
Whole different energy level of kind of anybody I've come across to work with.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, love being around them, brings great energy. I said, this person has to remain in my atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, however we make it work, he's got to remain. So
now I know.
That's why I brought you the shirt.
I appreciate you. I'm going to rock that thing.
You better rock. It's not for PJ time.
No, it's not for jam jams. It's not for my jam jam time.
You know, that's anybody that wants a shirt, just please don't wear it to bed.
Just actually wear it out.
Actually, you know, pay for the shirt. So
thank you.
Don't just.
And they're good quality too. The next level?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know where that came from.
I know my next level.
Jamal's boy.
Yes.
Fire.
So, yeah. Actually, Jelani does great. Shout out to Jelani. I don't know if he's listening. He's one of, I don't know if you know Jelani.
I don't know him.
Okay. He made
I've heard of him though.
He made the shirts. He also made that giant Michael Jackson picture that we have up in the kind of Raptors of the office.
I haven't seen it. I have to look. Yeah, I have to. No, I'm usually getting. I'm usually getting beat on face down. Pause. I'm usually getting beat on, so I don't.
I'm gonna text you a picture of it. You're gonna say, "How did I miss this thing?"
Yeah, send it to me.
But yeah, he made that for me. That's like the only non-sports kind of item hanging in the office. People walk in, they're like, "How does this fit the vibe at all?" I said, "I like
Michael
Jackson.
Yeah, you dig it. Fuck it.
Yeah, and it's brought some good colors, and it doesn't fit, but I like it. So deal with it." Like, why do you have the pedophile looking at me while
Jesus Christ.
Like, some people just getting angry. I was like,
damn, son. Just, all right, relax. What, are you more of a Prince guy?
I like MJ. I don't know. Just leave it alone. Right. But he made that for me.
As well as I'll have to take a look. You'll have to send me a picture. So now I have Nick's background locked up tight. What is Dr. Scott's background? How'd you get started?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, I'm old. Compared to...
don't listen to him. No, he's not.
A lot of other people, but, you know, been 40, 41, going on 42, coming up. So I've been doing it for 20 years, pretty much. Went away to school at GW in Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's cool. How'd you like D.C.?
It was amazing.
Yeah?
Great experience. I always say I would do anything just to trade back, have, you know, one weekend of that type of freedom in my life where sole responsibility is to kind of study, hang out with friends, do whatever you want.
It's nice when you don't have as many responsibilities as current day.
Yeah, current day responsibilities take up every minute of my day.
Yeah.
But I had a great experience there. I started off, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, whether it was business, liberal arts, go to law school. And then I was always into, you know, played soccer. Then I was always into the gym, working out, exercising. I just found the human anatomy very interesting. So I think there was probably a job fair. There was started learning about physical therapy at the job fair and what that would entail. And sounded like a good way to make money. So I switched my major to exercise science and graduated in 2004. Applied to PT school at New York Tech. So I came back home to go to PT school at home so I could stay at home because that PT school, very expensive.
Yeah.
Way more expensive today than it was back then, you know.
What was expensive back then?
I think I borrowed $65,000.
For the whole thing of school?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
A low interest rate. So I'm still paying it off, believe it or not. I may still be paying a little bit while I'm paying for my own kids' college.
But can I bundle this in?
Yeah. It's somewhat, was, I would say back then, the return on investment ratio was still pretty good. Where, like, you know, school costs you X, but you could get X salary. Where, you know, unfortunately for today's younger people, school costs way more. I'd say, you know, 2, 3, 4 times the amount. And the salary, unfortunately, stagnant.
Yeah. Well, inflation will just keep going up and people's wages will not. So it's weird how when you start saying, I need to charge more for X amount because everybody else said, oh, no, why would you charge more? Everything costs more, man. So, what the hell?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the main reasons, I mean, there's a whole other topic
Yeah.
But the main reason why PT salaries stayed stagnant over the past 15, 20 years, because let's just say Blue Cross Blue Shield, one of the biggest federal, one of the biggest insurance companies in the country. So one of the most popular insurances. 15 years ago, when you build that insurance in network physical therapy, you were getting $60 flat for the session. Now, 15 years ago, maybe that doesn't sound too bad. Today, build that same insurance in network in New York, flat, $60.
So they haven't updated that?
Nope.
Is there any now they've updated, now, I'm sure, other areas of...
Yeah, I think other areas might get a little more. Well, actually, I think I know they do get a little more. If you're a hospital-based, because you're so big, you could command a little more. But as a small, you know, business owner and private PT practices, they're like, all right, you don't like that, don't take it.
So now is that your choice then in business to not take insurance?
We take it out of network. So okay. If you do have the out-of-network benefits, you know, you could get reimbursed partial for the session. But yeah, obviously you see what we do there. If we're getting paid $60, you know, consistently from every person coming in, we would not stay in business.
Yeah, you wouldn't have it. Yeah. I mean, you guys take the time, which is nice because there's a lot of spots that don't do that.
Yeah, because they're taking all the in-network insurances.
Yeah.
Again, that's why 4 or 6 people an hour have to be flooded in the gates like, you know, a meat market.
Yeah. And it's tough because, you know, you go there, you're not feeling well. You want to get a little TLC. And I've told you before, I've gone to people and I like working with certain people, but it's just they don't spend the time with you. So it's like, it's almost like that you tell them, hey, this is hurting on me. Okay. And, you know, 5 minutes, they work on you, this and then they're like, okay, great. We'll see you. And it's like, no, no, no. Like, okay, that was bad. But, you know, I also have this going on. This,
yeah.
Why are you rushing out? Like, why are you running out? I just waited an hour to get into your office. Like, yeah. Why am I still wait? Why do I have to get rushed out 5 minutes just because you took too many clients to come into this one space?
Yeah. Then people get a bad taste of physical therapy, which I'm constantly explaining. You know, people say, oh, I've tried physical therapy. It's a waste of time. I say, well, what did you do? Well, you know, they gave me the hot pack, the stimulation, and then they showed me some stretches and they put me in a room where I was doing some bands. I was like, okay, well, you didn't have PT, you didn't have physical therapy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm constantly explaining that. And, you know, unfortunately, what we do is way different. You know, we don't like rushing people. In fact, sometimes we spend too much time with people because they're like, I didn't realize you were going to keep me here this long. I got to get out of here. I was like, oh, I was just going to show you like this movement to correct yourself, to help with this problem. Like, oh, no, next time.
Yeah. Well, do you find that people don't like the movements anyway, the stretching and the movements? Do they do them when they get home? Because I don't.
Yeah, you're honest about it.
I'm honest.
Some people do. Some people don't.
Yeah.
I always say, don't lie to me.
No, I say no.
Be honest.
I didn't do them.
Men, yeah.
I never did them.
Men don't lie to other men.
Yeah. I usually go, our relationship was never built on lies. I never did it. I'll just let you know. Even Marina, when I go to see Marina for certain things, it's like, I know she said that you guys were talking about some collab type stuff, which would be cool.
She was in yesterday. I'm actually, how far is she from here?
Very, very close. She's down the road.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to try to shoot over after.
That's what she said. I saw her
at
class this morning at 11.
Oh, really?
At 10 o'clock. Yeah.
Nice.
So, that sometimes she'll go to me. She'll be like, all right, Nick, you know, if I hurt myself during jiu-jitsu and I just saw her real quick, she just goes, okay, Nick, go home, ice this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. I just get home. I go look at like for the ice and stuff like that. I go, fuck this. I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
I just lay down and then she'll hit me up. Did you ice it? No.
She knows you too well.
Yeah, so I can't lie. I go, no, I didn't ice it.
Yeah. So, but what I mentioned about that in-network stuff, that's actually – when I was working for other places, that was the only way it was done. The places I worked at, nobody was paying out of pocket because they would never pay out of pocket for, you know, to have that type of experience, just being rushed and in a room. And, you know, I went to New York Tech and we got a little distracted, graduated from there. And this is something I tell young people that I kind of regret a little bit. Basically, I was so excited to finally graduate from graduate school because that's a, you know, I know Nick explained it, 7-year program. I was just in school for 3 years. I was watching my friends, you know, move out to apartments, make money, you know, X, Y, Z, do this, do that. And, you know, I was like, I want to start making money. I graduated. Within like 2 weeks, I started working. Within, you know, a week after that, I started working, you know, 2 jobs. I was like, I'm going to work my full-time job. I'm going to do some extra work on the side because I just want to, you know, try to grind and hustle and learn as much as I can and, you know, make as much money as I can. But I really never took that time off to just, you know, relax, work on a normal schedule. I don't need to work, didn't really need to work 50, 60 hours. But, you know, at that time I wanted to buy a house when I was young. I wanted to rent out the house. So I'm just motivated to constantly hustle and grind. and you know, never got a chance to take that. Oh, I'll travel to Amsterdam or go to the Caribbean, trips here and there a few times a year. You know, really never got to do any of that. And then, you know, I graduated in 2007. 2008, I met my wife.
So life just kind of kept unrolling it pretty quickly for you in succession.
Then, you know, which I don't regret any of this, but we got married fast and we had my older son pretty fast. So, and then we had the house pretty fast from, you know, working and saving the money. Back then on Long Island, when I was, you know, 25, 26, I bought first house. You could buy a house for $400,000. Today you cannot.
No, today you cannot. Again, at this rate, I will be renting for a long time.
Not to sound like that old person again. Well, I did say I'm old, but, you know, I feel for some of the younger people because it's tougher. You have the higher school debt, the higher cost of living, the higher cost of the housing market here is almost, you know, as a new buyer, really hard to break into.
I talked to my mom a lot because my mom's a mortgage broker. So I talked to her a lot about just things in general, pricing and just expenses and whatnot. And, you know, we go over things on a daily basis just about how expensive things are as a whole. And I try to explain to her, I'm like, you know, she bought her first house when she was 21. I mean, she was hustling, mortgage broker, worked in the clubs. Like, there's a lot of things that she's been doing over the years. She was managing them and just never, kind of like you in that situation, just never not working. She was always going at it, hustling. And it's like, you can still do that to the extent that y'all were doing it back then, but it's just, it doesn't hit the same because everything's just astronomical.
Yeah, it would be impossible to work those two jobs now and then still just buy
the
house.
I go to the grocery store every like 3-4 days. I look in the fridge and I go, how do I need to go to the grocery store again? I'm really not eating that much. I fast a lot of the time now. Like I'm not really consuming that much food. Every time I go, it's $150 to $200 every time. So I'm like, three, four times, you know, a month, you start racking it up. You're just like, wow, how am I spending?
You got to switch to OMAD.
Oh, yeah, from fucking Britain.
Listen to that whole, that guy, I respect that guy.
Britain's wild, man.
I'd like to meet him one day.
Britain's awesome. He's an old school Bev's guy. He knows a lot of shit. And it seems like he's figured out what works for him and a lot of people that
was
going to him.
That was a pretty cool, some of his experiences and different trials with the nutrition.
He's cool.
That was pretty.
I like hearing about shit like that because it's not the same shit over and over again. How tired are you hearing the same thing over and over again? It's your caloric intake.
Definitely very interesting and enlightening to listen to. And you know, that's a situation where, like, you know, I said, I do what I do. I'm in the daily rat race, the grind, a lot of responsibilities. He's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna leave and go to Colombia.
Yeah, he just dipped. He just went to Costa Rica first, and then Colombia now. And he hits me up. He's like, "Yo, bro, come down. I got you for the best single dude trip down to Colombia." And I'm like, "That's tempting, man. That's very tempting to go down to Colombia." But yeah,
well, you're wrapped up with this, but that again, like what I was just saying, you know, I would take advantage of those opportunities while you can.
Yeah, and you know, I was talking to my mom earlier today about it because we were talking about traveling and different things. And when I can't, you know, obviously for people that are watching, Kenji is here. He's laying at my feet right now. But I said, you know, whatever I wind up being with Kenji, because obviously he has epilepsy and all this stuff, it's like whether he lives 15 years, whether he lives four, you know, he's going to be four this December, whether he lives a year left. Like, you know, you just got to enjoy him for what he is. But after this, that is my last dog for a long time because the commitment.
Oh, yeah, you can't leave the dog.
It's so difficult, man. It's so difficult. And there's a lot of things that I want to be able to do, like traveling, going to specific classes at Sarah's and this and that. And the timing of his pills are every 12 hours. And if I'm going to be out X amount of time, my mom and I need to start coordinating. Because I don't have a girlfriend to help out, and he doesn't trust other people to like touch his mouth if they have to give him pills.
It's all you.
It's all us. I mean,
the dogs are tough.
If I didn't have my mom, I'd be so royally screwed because she helps out with everything. So it's like traveling for work, traveling for leisure and pleasure. Everything has to be coordinated with her and her life as well because I need him to be able to be watched.
Yep.
And because he's not fixed and because he eats raw, these places that and because of his pill schedule, a lot of boarding places won't take him. So there's like a lot of there's a lot of things that go into it. So, you know, my advice.
You're not going to Columbia after all.
I mean, I can. I just have to coordinate with my mom, make sure she can watch him.
Sounds tough.
It is. It's really tough. And listen, you have kids. You understand.
My wife and I are both big dog lovers. I had a mini dachshund. She had a mini poodle growing up. And my parents have two mini dachshunds. They were my brothers, but now they have them. I love those dogs. But the kids want a dog. I'm like, we cannot add. That's not happen.
Yeah, it's
not add another responsibility.
It's a lifelong.
It's like having another kid.
It's a lifelong commitment. And what's difficult about it is, you know, when Kenji got sick, his breeder had hit me up. We were talking back and forth a lot just about what was going on with him and this and that. And she said a bunch of times to me, if you ever feel the need, like you can't handle the schedule anymore, this and that, I will always take him back. And I'm just like, I can't fucking bring him back. That's my man. I thought about it for a second. I was like, this, it's really difficult. I mean, every 12 hours he needs the pills. You know, if he has a seizure, there's like a number of things that you have to do and you have to watch him. And it really just throws a wrench. It's like having a sick child. That's really what it kind of winds up being in certain ways.
Yep.
So it's like, but
now you're committed.
Yeah. But that's what it is. It's a lifelong commitment for me. So that's my man. I got to make sure that he's set. I got to make sure that he's good. And guess what? We deal with shit as it comes. But going forward, should I be without him at any point? I'm done. I'm done with dogs for a long time. This threw me for an emotional roller coaster going forward. I was like, was not expecting a young pup to have any sickness or illness. You know, my last dog, she lived until she was 12. She had cancer for the last year and a half. And it was brutal. It was brutal at the end. I mean, she was limping because she had a tumor in her shoulder. She started dragging the paw. It was horrible. And then you don't know when the right time to relieve them of said pain and sickness is. But we dragged it out far too long because we were saving ourselves versus having to save her. That's really what it wound up being. So it's a difficult thing. And then getting him, I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm excited to get a pup, you know, get another 10, 12 years and not have to deal with anything, you know, sickness wise. But then it's like, nope.
Where is he anyway?
He's right here. Right here.
Oh, okay.
He's underneath.
He's hiding.
Hey, he's chilling. He's laying.
I had him next to me and he left.
Yeah, he left. He was like.
He liked my smell when I walked in.
Yep.
Got tired of it.
And he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm good on this now. He's like, okay, he's got a friendly scent. I'm going to walk away.
Yeah.
So in terms of just commitments and whatnot, it becomes tough. And I just, I want to be able to travel and do things and have be a little bit untethered because I can be in my line of work. You know, I can shoot content. I can edit content from theoretically anywhere.
Like Britton was saying, is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Britton.
Like he was saying, he does it from his phone on the balcony or wherever on the beach.
Yeah.
Wherever he is in Colombia.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in Medellin.
Which is pretty amazing. Again, when I was younger in school, the thought of anybody doing anything out of their house for work was unheard of.
Really?
Yeah, it was like 20 years ago. I started college in 2000.
So everybody had offices. Nobody did any homework.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe a handful of people as the internet, the computer thing started, but everybody was, you were going to an office.
And what was, so now I'm curious about the history of just, because I always felt like PT was mainly, you got in a car accident, you went to PT because you had to for the court type of situation.
Yeah.
That's what I always heard in dealt with.
No fault, the workers' comp. I mean, that situation is still like that. But yeah, I could kind of explain the difference of what we do in terms of, you know, that's, you're going to, generic in-network PT office. You got in a car accident. Oh, your neck hurts. You're going to come in. You're going to get heat, stim, maybe 5-minute massage on the neck. Do a banded row and hit the road. And, your lawyer tells you to do that 3 times a week because,
you gotta keep appearances up.
Yeah, it's gotta look good for the case. You know, it's pretty interesting that no fault in workers' comp people never get better. But somehow people, when they're paying out of pocket, they get better pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, because maybe they're doing the stretches that you're supposed to do, and they're actually taking it seriously, any type of rehab that they have.
Yep.
And plus, you're working with athletes now. So, like, when did that switch kind of occur? Because I guess you can either be branded as the guy that everybody goes to for car accidents and just regular type of work to then pivoting and actually working with people that have professional careers and athletes.
Yeah, well, we actually do both. So a lot of people say, oh, I want to come in, but I'm not a bodybuilder and I'm not, I don't fight MMA. I'm like, yeah, well, we see regular people. They're like, but I see you on the videos. Look like you're gonna annihilate me. I was like, no, I'm able to ease up and, you know, we work towards your tolerance.
Yeah.
It's not just a complete, beatdown of everybody that walks in. I see you cracking the necks and digging your elbow into this person's back. I don't think I can handle it. I said,
that sometimes. Sometimes you got to get into that bone.
That's true. But, no, we also do the no fault and workers' comp, but what separates us from everybody else is, somebody with no fault wants to just come in and sign a piece of paper that they've been there and take a hot pack. I'm not going to do that. Like those people that we work with no fault, they legitimately have issues. They want to get better. We also spend the time with them. So it's not, you know, it's not much different treatment than some of the, you know, athletes would be getting.
And but, do you find that you have to tell people that?
All the time.
Yeah.
Because they just assume everybody coming in is, you know, an athlete or a bodybuilder or, they need to go to a special place that deals with car accidents or, you know, more like I would say classic PT, meniscus surgery, ACL, you know, rotator cuff repair. But we do all that post-surgical work. And I mean, I've been doing it for 20 years. That's what I probably have, you know, the most experience with, you know, doing that kind of classic PT. But I just had to, I hit a point, you know, it was kind of hit, I got to hit a rewind button. I could tell how it changed, but I hit a point where I had to stop doing the PT the way it was being done when I was working for other people, because I just couldn't take it anymore.
And similar to Nick's experiences where he was mentoring with a few people for the clinicals, right?
Yeah. Except he was doing that for, you know, 2 months, 3 months. I was doing it for years.
Yeah.
And again, it was because I was in that rat race with a lot of bills, lots of expenses. So when you're kind of, you know, going, I'm not going to get, you know, dramatics. I was check to check, but just had a
be real about it. I mean, yeah, if that's the case, then that's the case.
I mean, we had a little more than check to check, but like, you have the kids, you have the house, you have the mortgage, you have all types of expenses. Can't just be like, oh, well, I don't like doing PT this way. So now I decide I'm going to just do nothing.
Yeah.
the bills remain. So,
and that's what you're classically trained in. And you had to kind of bite the bullet for a little while.
I bit the bullet for a while to the point where, you know, rewind, I graduated New York Tech. I was working for neurosurgeons for the first 5 years. It was a great job.
I was going to say, what was that like?
That was great. They did a lot of, we did a lot of necks, backs, traumatic brain injury. I got a lot of great experiences. I worked with, these were world-renowned brain surgeons, physicians, all great guys. The PT, the physical therapy side, which I was kind of always figured it may be an issue at some point, we were not very busy. It was in Great Neck. They also had an MRI machine. They had a lot of, you know, they wanted to keep the PT in-house. They wanted quality rehab, or at least I thought they wanted quality rehab, you know, for the patients that had surgery, so they get the time, one-on-one time. And then their group, physician group, they added more physicians. The guy, the main doctor who started it, he brought on a board. So they were getting bigger. We were still in half, we had the PT, but they weren't, you know, a lot of the doctors weren't thinking of us, sending us their own patients for whatever reason. So we were working on, you know, 10 people a day and not very busy, but, you know, had a great, you know, relationship with the people I work with, the patients, clients coming in. And everybody, there was some rumors that, oh, it's getting, you know, there's talk that they may shut it down because we're just not making the money. But I always thought, oh, you know, they liked having us. They wanted, you know, a good experience for their patients to be able to go to their own rehab. And they had a big, had a big Christmas party. I'm like, oh, I'm not worried. They just spent like $100,000 on a big Christmas party. They're not going to get rid of the PT. 2 weeks later, they call us into, the board meeting with the, you know, lawyer sitting down. Everybody went one by one. They're like, bad news, basically, we're shutting down the PT.
Great.
So at that time, I was, had the six-month-old baby, had the house, you know, with the bills. So, you know, kind of that was kind of a rude awakening. Like my first kind of awakening where I realized I have to be kind of in control of my own destiny. But also at that same time, you know, I needed to have a job. So started looking for jobs. This is like probably 2011 or something. And I'm looking around Long Island, didn't see anything. And then there was a job in Forest Hills, Queens. My wife's like, I'm like, oh, I'm not driving to, you know, Forest Hills. That's ridiculous. My wife's like, what the hell are you talking about? you gotta get a job. You gotta start making, get back to making money. So I took that job and actually I really, you know, I liked it. So that was a multidisciplinary office. Worked for a medical doctor. There was chiropractors, there was a physician assistant. They were doing trigger point injections, got exposure to a lot of different things. The only issue with that job was I was basically working 14-hour days and working on close to 40 people a day. So I like the people I work with, but there was literally no time to do much of anything with anybody other than a quick, like, couple-minute massage, quick stretch, call over the physician assistant, give a trigger point, because you know that they kind of wanted you to do with everybody because they make the most money on that. And
so it was like an upsell.
Yeah. Well, they were just billing the insurance for it.
Yeah.
It was all, that was also all, you know, kind of insurance based. So I realized, I was doing that for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then, you know, my son was, you know, year and a half, 2 years old at the time. And I was basically, a lot of days just not even seeing him.
Yeah.
Which that became, you know, a problem for me. I just couldn't, you know, I wanted to make the money, but at the same time, I couldn't justify that. Just, there's no point, what's the point of making the money if you can't even see your kid?
There's a lot of people that don't care about that. There's a lot of people that
don't. Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, but, a lot of people that don't care about that. The guys that I used to deal with in the Hamptons, I used to sell the home audio video systems in the Hamptons, and it'd be the wife and the kids out there all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be like, I'd go to the guys that I was with, I'd be like, where's the husband?
Yeah.
You know, because this is, you know, he's paying for all this. It's his house. He's not out here hanging out. And they're like, no, he's 24/7. He's behind the computers doing financial trading and this and that. I go, what kind of fucking life is that, man? That's what you want to do?
Not worth it.
Is that really worth the house, the fat car, stuff like that, where you just, all you do is just, you're in your office by yourself and your family gets to experience everything that you're providing for them. It's like, okay, that's maybe a good feeling because you're able to give them this, but you don't get any type of connection with them. That's horrible.
Nah. It's and horrible. Then I'm, you know, fortunate. My wife, she always said, she wanted me home. She's like, you need to stop working at 3-4 o'clock. We could be home together with the kids. Gotta get home. Gotta figure out how that happens. I said, yeah, you're right. So again, I left that job. Actually found something closer to home in Bethpage. At first, I interviewed for the job, and they wanted to bring me on, but they wanted me to work. Same thing, like, oh, come in at 11, 12 o'clock, but we need you till like 8 o'clock. I was like, well, that doesn't change anything for me. Then I might as well just keep my job that I have now if I'm not going to be able to get home sooner. So then I don't know what happened over there, but somebody else left, and then they called me again. Oh, you know, you're able to still think about making a transition to work for us? And I said, yeah, you able to change my schedule? And they're like, yeah, you come in, do 7:30 to 3:30, 7 to 3, and you're good. I was like, beautiful. So took that job. It was a good job, outpatient. You know, I would call it a mill type office where everybody was in network insurance. They were trying to do, you know, 100 people a day. You know, just a rat race of person after person after person. And, at a time I did like it. You know, I appreciate, you know, in case any of those people listen now, you know, it's nothing personal. Appreciate the job. There was some great PTs there. My boss, the owner, was a great guy. But there's some other, you know, things that I just didn't like that they were doing, turned into more trying to be too corporate in terms of the numbers game. You know, why didn't this person come back for, 16 visits? They only came back for 8 visits. What do you think you could have done differently? I mean, I was always giving 110% with everybody anyway. So I don't know, maybe, you know, they had something, maybe they got better.
Next time I'll make sure that I have his favorite snacks lined up. Yeah, that'll make him want to come back.
Yeah, maybe they got better.
That's the unfortunate thing that I dealt with at Apple as well and all these other companies. It's like they're just so fixated on year over year type shit. How can we just keep everybody just growing and growing? And it's like at some point you got to understand things level off. Like,
exactly. I would say that's exactly – it didn't start out like that, but they kind of transitioned into like trying to be more like that type of atmosphere, corporate, the growth. How are we going to make more this month versus last month? And – you know, what could you do differently? To the point, I was there for a few years and just got to the point where, you know, I was complaining a lot. I was complaining to my wife, my brother. He's an entrepreneur. He has his own business. And, you know, between my wife and my brother, they're definitely my motivators. My brother was kind of, you know, inspired me to do what I'm doing now. Probably definitely a shout out to my brother, Josh. I don't think he's listening, but I'll have to let him, expose him to the podcast. Definitely, wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't without his, inspiration and guidance. And that's my younger brother, even though I got 4 or 5 years on him. He definitely helped me out with a lot of things. But anyway, so it got to the point where, you know, got really bad. Like, I really just dreaded going to work. Things, you know, I had the great schedule. I was done 3:30, 4 o'clock, I was home. But, like, just getting up that next day that I can't believe I got to see these people again. It got that bad that they brought me in one day like, oh, you don't seem like yourself lately. You don't seem that happy. Stuff you want to talk about. I said, it's not how I will. Basically, I just like right there, then on there on the spot, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm just not happy, you know, here. I have to move on. And like they actually, my wife and my brother were saying, just if you're not happy there, just leave. But
you'll find another thing. Yeah, you know, the opportunities kind of just present themselves when they need to.
Yeah, I was just so fixated on the schedule because I wanted to be home with my kids. And I knew if I left that, it may be tough to get to that point again where I'm able to be done because, again, back to the rat race, we, you know, have a lot of expenses. So somehow these bills have to get paid. But at the same time, you know, I want to be, you know, with my family.
It's crazy how you make more and more money. And for some reason, it's just like the rat race just catches up to you.
Yeah. I mean,
because you made more money, you're able to afford more things. But those more things that you afforded probably cost more in terms of just like not only the dollar signs, but the amount of time that you're going to have to expend away from the things that you love. It's weird.
Yeah. So, you know, I was able to, I mentioned my brother. So my brother was telling me, you know, he had his own business that was starting to do pretty well. Not going to give too many details because he kind of likes to stay, you know, under the radar with his business. But it's a shipping business,
cool.
Shipping out a lot of products. So he's like, just stop. If you're not happy doing what you're doing, just come work for me. Help me out. I could use the help. So I had that in the back of my head. My wife was saying the same thing. Just, you know, if you're not, in, you know, you're that miserable there, what's the big deal? Just you'll figure it out. So when they said that to me, and I was like, I'm tired of all these, you know, emotional conversations at work. I just want to work with people. I want to do what I do best. You know, that's the physical therapy. I don't want to discuss numbers and why this one didn't come back or, you know, all this other nonsense that's really separate from what I was trained to do, which is kind of, and what I like to do, get people, you know, better through physical therapy. So, yeah, basically on the spot, I just, not really planned, just decided to quit. So then I was like, all right, well, now what are we going to do? We got to figure this out. But started, you know, working for my brother at his warehouse in Farmingdale. And then, but he, you know, he and my wife said to me, you know, I wouldn't just give up the PT completely. But for the start, I needed a break. Mm-hmm. Just complete stop. I needed to, and it was such a relief. Just like taking a breather and like I was doing this for so many years, like day in and day out, 30, 40 people a day. Nonstop, like I mentioned, 2 weeks after I graduated school, and I just needed that, like, you know, it was absolute burnout. Like I just needed a complete stop. I said I had to change the way I was doing things because, yes, I want to see my family, but I also couldn't live like day in and day out doing just something that was doing it the way it was making me miserable. So that when so I was doing the shipping, and then. You know, I didn't want to give up on the PT completely because I knew I was good at it and I liked doing it. I just had to, you know, figure out a different way. So, you know, I was always, you know, go to the gym every day. That's a big part of my life. And I'm at the gym and, you know, a lot of people there knew I was a PT. They see me lifting, they would ask questions. So one guy at the gym was like, oh, you know, I'm doing this exercise. You know, it's killing my back. I was like, oh, why don't you try making, you know, this adjustment or that adjustment? We were talking on and off, and then I remember we're in the locker room, and he's like, "Oh, you know, you're helping me my back a lot, but I like to come see you at, you know, you're a PT. I like to come see you." I was like, "He's like, where's your office?" I was like, just paused in my head. I was like, "What am I gonna do here?" I was like, "Oh, so I was like, oh, well, I have a home office." He's like, "Oh, okay, great." He's like, "Where can I come in?" I was like, "He's like, can I come in tomorrow if you're free?" I think it was Friday, and then it was Friday morning, and then that was next day was Saturday. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, absolutely. Well, you know, what time's good? So set it up, and I do not have a home office.
Impromptu business entry.
But I did have a double car garage at the house, and we used one room was turned into a guest room for my in-laws. But it was packed with like queen size bed, dresser, shit everywhere. So I get home, and I tell my wife, I'm like, we have to move the bed out of the queen size bed out of the guest room. She's like, but my parents are coming next week. What are you talking about? I'm like, no, it's not my PT office.
It's not my impromptu PT office.
Yeah. So basically,
I'll make a barn for them in the back.
You know, again, my wife, super supportive, you know, couldn't have done it without her. She's like, all right, let's do this. So we clear all the stuff out. I had a table from when I was, you know, in my house just for, when I would work on people here and there, set up the table, brought a desk in there, just put some bullshit folders in with people's names on it that I, you know, got that idea from my mom, from her business, because she started out of the basement as well. She's a CPA. And she said when she first started out of the basement, she, you know, just put in a bunch of file cabinets, even though they're completely empty. So when she brought the first set of people, they would think like, oh, this person's really busy.
It looked like she was successful already. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
So cleaned everything out, set up the table, set up a desk, put some other like PT things in there, hung some different like, you know, pictures. Not that one because I didn't have it yet, but some things on the wall. And then you would come in through the garage. So gentleman comes in. He hangs his jacket up and he's like, I don't know what he's going to think of this. He's like, first thing he said to me is, oh, wow, this is really nice. This is much better than going to like a busy physical therapy office and this and that. He's like, you know, I worked on him. He had a great experience, kept it going. And then got me a little more confident that just talking to people at the gym. And then I met, I don't know if you know Jenna. She used to go to Bev's. She was a trainer at Lifetime.
Oh, yeah, Blanchuk.
Yep.
Yeah.
So she was a trainer at Lifetime, and you know, we used to just talk about lifting and working out. And we were just talking after that one day, and she's like, I see you working out hard here. You in like the fitness industry or this or that? I said, oh, I'm actually a physical therapist. And she's like, oh, what kind of work do you do? I said, oh, I like to you know, work with athletes, bodybuilders, all types of, you know, things like that. She's like, oh, it's good to know. I was like, oh, well, you know somebody? She's like, yeah, me. I'm competing on my first competition, and you know, I could definitely use that weekly type of work because my quads, my back, you know, whatever it is, everything was killing me. So she was doing her first competition. She was really motivated into it, and she's you know, Jen's a great person. She was you know, another good inspiration to me. Somebody that I felt lucky that, you know, she was one of my first clients. I was you know, started with her, working with her week after week. Then she was you know, obviously happy with the services I was doing. She started telling other people at the gym. And
word of mouth, know, man.
Yeah.
That's how it starts.
Spread like wildfire at Bev's with Dara and Louis, some of my original clients. And then
let me ask you this. What were some of the things that you saw that you could improve in the field than starting on your own and doing it out of your own? Not only just making it easier for people to just come in a more relaxed environment, what were some of the things that you saw that you didn't want to incorporate besides the number thing?
Yeah. So
treatment-wise.
Well, when I was in the garage, it was hard to make, I mean, it was all me. So, you know, I was spending the time with people. I took it very serious. Everybody was coming in the door. Well, I still take it serious now, but you know, there was no other, it's not like I could put somebody in a gym area and be like, everything was just one-on-one with me anyway. So people were really, you know, enjoying that type of atmosphere. And yeah, basically I was trying to do the opposite of everything I did at my previous jobs.
Yeah.
Pretty much I was like, whatever I did there, I'm not going to do here. So somebody walks in, they're not getting heat and stimulation. That's, you know, everybody listening, if you're going to PT, you know, just a little secret, that's generally just you know, time management type thing, just to help, you know, okay, we don't got time to get that person right now. Let's give him heat and stim while we work on this person. Then that person gets the heat and stim. I mean, that's really, you know, feels good, but it's just, it's on that. If you're limited with time, that time could be utilized so much more towards exercise or the manual therapy, especially if somebody is on a time constraint.
And that's what you found, the manual therapy is probably the best way to treat a lot of the issues that people come in with?
Yeah, so I was kind of really, because of the small space, I couldn't just use fancy machines or, you know, do other fancy modalities with people. It was all just me, just my hands. So I'm like, I never really did it that way until I was kind of forced to do it that way because I didn't even have the opportunity at my old jobs to do it that way. And then I'm like, wow, people are, you know, really receptive to this. So probably onto something here.
Were you sore the first couple times you were doing it because your hand strength probably wasn't up to snuff yet?
I was, you know, I was a little fatigued, but I was also used to working on like 30 to 40 people a day, which is absolutely ridiculous looking back. I don't even know how or why I did that, but you know, I build up your hands, but you know, 30 to 40 people a day, but it was only, you know, 8 to 10 minutes at a time. Now I'm working on one person for an hour and a half, really, you know, building the relationship, really getting, you know, to know those people. And
which is important.
Yeah, it was great.
Then, because people are going to feel more comfortable the more that you get to know them on a personal level and the injury that they've sustained and how you're going to be able to communicate not only what you're doing, but actually effectively treating the issue at hand.
But yeah, thankfully, physically, I never really had a problem except for one day, which I was going to mention about Jamal.
So, Jay Money.
So I was doing it out of my garage. Most of the patients, clients were coming from Bev's or Lifetime. I'd probably say 75% of the crowd was from those gyms. And I remember it was one Friday afternoon. I had like the last two or three people a day. Oh, and mind you, you know, I was still, believe it or not, I was actually still doing the shipping for my brother. I was doing both because I took what I did for him very serious. You know, obviously I wanted him to succeed, and the fact that he let me, you know, come on and help me out just to you know, help me pay my bills and do some work for him. So I would do the work on somebody in the garage, finish with that person, run upstairs, do the packaging, shipping, run to the post office, come back, get there just in time for the next person. Then I'd be working on that person. Then I'd be going back to doing the shipping. I mean, it's a lot. I was doing that for 12, 14 hours straight a lot of times throughout the day. And back to the Jamal story. So it was one Friday afternoon. I had like, maybe I worked on like 5-6 people. I was doing the shipping in between. So first, Jamal, you know, I can't remember who was first, but basically I worked on Jamal and Max Charles back to back.
Okay.
For about 3 to 4 straight hours. I think it was Max. It was Max first.
Oof.
And both of those guys take more pressure than anybody.
Yeah.
They're number one and two.
I can only imagine how hard you had to work Max too.
Max crazy. Yeah.
His muscles so dense.
He doesn't feel anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going, you know, 110%. He's like, you can go a little deeper.
You can go deeper.
Yeah. Couldn't really hear him. He's like, I'm like, oh.
Okay.
So yeah, I was like.
When you crack the elbows out, you're like, fuck, I need a little more leverage now.
Yeah. So I was working on him, dying. Crazy session. You know, but he said he felt great afterwards.
Good.
I get like a 3-minute break. I'm like, I run up to my kitchen, I grab some water. I look out the window, the next car pulls up. I'm like, oh, what the fuck?
It's Jamal.
Okay, it's Jamal.
Yep.
He's like, what's up, brother? Nice to meet you. Blah, blah. He starts telling me all his injuries, which, you know, he had quite a few, which I don't know how he was doing what he was doing based on what he does.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then
it doesn't stop.
I just kind of found some more motivation just to push through and work with him for, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, just manual therapy. And that was the first time I met Jamal, was after working on Max. Thank God I pushed through because, you know, like I mentioned previously, you know, just having Jamal as such a loyal client, great guy. And
he's with you once a week.
Yeah, once a week.
He's with you once a week.
Actually, believe it or not, you know, as we move on in my story of life here, when I moved my office to the warehouse during COVID, he would come in almost every day, every other day, because we both kind of had nothing else to do.
Like, I'll treat you.
That's when it was just he and I in the warehouse, 90s R&B, just doing the manual therapy, chatting, chopping it up, got to, you know, learn a lot about each other. You know, he was always telling me some of his goals, you know, how he was going to make the pre-workout and this and that. And now, you know, it's thinking back at some of that stuff and seeing everybody's, a lot of these people's visions become reality for them, you know, obviously makes me happy.
Yeah, the development you see of different people, and it's not just talk. It's not just somebody just saying things to say it because they are bored and don't have anything going at the current moment. They actually follow through with it when it's time to execute.
So yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. And just like he wants to see with me, I want to see with him, you know, as much success as possible.
Yeah, well, that's also the team, man. You hope that the people that you have around you, the people treating you, the people that are in your corner are going to hold that same energy on a constant basis.
Yeah.
That's huge.
So he went with me from the garage, obviously, to the warehouse, to the new, well, it's not so new anymore. We've been there for over 2 years.
Time flies.
But yeah, thank God, you know, I think back and like all these different moments, thank God I, you know, put 100% effort with him because, you know, just this week he sent me 2 new people along. Dude knows everybody. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He knows.
Brick by brick, man.
Yeah. And when I was doing it out of my garage and I had that sign right, if you look at some of my old Instagram videos, which, you know, looking back at just, you know, they're a little weird. Just me in the garage massaging people, doing what I'm doing.
I swear it's a business. I swear it's a legitimate business.
You could see the sign above, you know, the table where I was working, that sign right there. And again, I didn't know where that was going to take me. But just real quickly, so I was in the garage, you know, I was going up and down with the shipping. It was just that, again, that became a too much, you know, I like to think I can handle anything. But just between like some days, I had 10, 15, 20 people coming through the garage. Shout out to my neighbors on my old block. They did not care. They all supported me. Half of them were...
Is he turning tricks in that garage? Yeah. What the fuck's going on over there?
Oh, they would say... my neighbor across the street, he was always outside hanging out. Jamie's my boy. He still comes into the new office also, even though he's my old neighbor. He would text me like, bro, what's with these giant, massive dudes coming in your garage? Are these like NFL players, wrestlers?
Filming a movie.
Yeah. Like, what the...
Stop spying on me, Jamie.
Yeah, he's like, fuck is going on there? I was like, bro, I don't even know. I don't know where these people come from at this point now. But then like I said, 10, 15, even at some days, 20 people a day coming to the garage. Some people wanted to come 5 in the morning. I had some people come 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, this is going to be just become a way too much. I had to give up. I told my brother, obviously he completely understood. He's like, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And this is what I wanted to happen for you.
But it's cool that he was there to help you and support you when you needed it. So, and
oh yeah,
he's totally like understanding. And he wanted to see you do your thing and do well.
Like I said, he gave me that confidence. You know, between him and my wife, I wouldn't have been able to, you know, do any of this without them with their support. So, you know, a lot of people, I think they're successful because you got to have the right team around you.
Yeah.
Without the right support, it could be very difficult.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and say I did everything on my own because. Again, without my wife, my brother, and even you know, my parents, my in-laws, they all supported me with everything I was doing.
Yeah.
100%.
That's huge.
They didn't say, oh, you're going to quit your job. Where's your money going to come from? You know, they had faith in me that
figure it out as we roll.
That's it. So then you know, I had to sign up in the garage. Again, no great thing is created suddenly. And but I still didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have a plan.
But the plan was.
I knew I needed to get out of my garage because.
But the funny thing is, you're saying that you didn't have a plan, but the plan was unfolding without you even understanding or noticing that things were actually unfolding that way.
Yeah, looking back, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So I didn't really, again, I didn't plan on doing the garage, and then, you know, I was in the garage. You know, that's you know, it could be a lonely world. I don't think a lot of people really realize just starting at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, person after person after person after person.
Yep.
You know, I would just, at one time I tried watching Netflix. That didn't go over too well. I don't think the person liked that. I was focusing on a movie while I was trying to work on their back.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, went with the tunes. I used to put on some music videos on the TV. But that got lonely. I said, I have to, you know, I want to get out of this garage, but there was no way I could take over rent in the storefront. No way I could, you know, I give you credit for this because that's a stressful thing to do.
Yeah, it's overhead.
I didn't feel like I had the money, or even though I was busy, I didn't feel like I had the timing yet to just like go, you know, lease a storefront for a PT office, a giant, you know, square footage gym, a warehouse, or this or that. So I just need to get out of this garage.
Yeah.
So
that's how I felt like when I was editing in my room. I would shoot. I would go out. This is when I was doing all fitness competitors. Thank fucking God I don't do that much anymore. But it was basically just like all day I'd be shooting at Bev's or gyms or this or that or supplement companies and this and that. And it was great. Like I was getting a lot of exposure. I was able to work with a lot of different people. I was talking to a lot of the professional athletes. I was able to make really cool, lasting relationships with a lot of different people. But the issue was like I'd go out and shoot all day. Then when I was done shooting because all my shoots were at gyms, I didn't feel like training. I was like not in the mood to now be there for another 2 hours to hit arms or hit chest or hit legs or whatever it was. I'm exhausted. I just filmed for 5-6 hours straight.
That sounds like a grind.
Yeah, it was exhausting, and I just didn't want to do it like that. So then my fitness started slacking. But the real struggle was it was a blessing and a curse because I would be able to put all my shit in my garage at my mom's house, and then I'd go up to my room, I'd offload all my footage, and I'd sit at my desk for the next X amount of hours, and I would just edit. And my TV was right there, and obviously my dog at the time, Cookie, she was in the house. So it's like everything was just right there. And I just, everything was just a revolving, like sitting here doing it and this and that. But then you look at the clock and it's like, I've been editing from 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night. Now it's 3 in the morning.
Plus it's probably hard to separate, you know, work from just trying to chill.
There's no separation.
When you're doing it that way.
There's no separation. I'd have Xbox on behind me. I'd turn around while something was exporting. I'd play a couple games with some friends. And then I'd turn back around and I'd start editing again.
Yeah.
And it was good in a lot of ways because my productivity was through the fucking roof. But at what cost now? Now I don't have a life. I don't do anything else. And when I'm not able to like sit and edit now in my little space, it felt like I was just in a movie. Like every day was the same. It's so monotonous and it's just the same thing over and over and over again. So then I got my space in Roslyn. Space in Roslyn was great. And really why I wanted to get that space was because we were doing the podcast and I didn't want people in my home. Like I didn't want people like you, Jamal, like I don't care about that, but people that I didn't know personally for a while, I don't want to just invite them into my house to just do a podcast. It's just not how I want to do things.
Oh yeah. So, well, that's exactly me. I mean, I was doing friends, people I knew, then I got to the point, my phone was blowing up with random people. I said, you know, realistically, I can't just keep, I got kids.
I can't just have everybody coming in randomly.
I'm not going to name any names, but some, you know, just some nut jobs out there.
Oh yeah.
You don't want coming to your house.
Oh yeah. I have people hit me up. Dude, I have people hit me up all the time. They get my phone number, and actually this is me getting to the point on side note of I'm gonna be getting a business phone soon because I can't handle having my regular number out there. The amount of questions I get for podcasts, the amount of questions I get for video shoots and photos and this and that. And then I have people just like get my number off my website and just start hitting me up and asking me questions. Hey, I just want to pick your brain for this. Hey, I want to do that. No, leave me alone. Like that's not how we're doing this. And I want to be able to just like dissociate myself from that for a little while. When I go to the gym, when I go here, when I go spend some time with family, I want to have my personal phone with me. I want to leave my business phone at home. I don't want to be on call for everybody. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
You don't need to hit me up all hours of the day and night because of a video project. I'll answer you when I answer you. And if you decide to go with somebody else, then you didn't have the patience to just wait like an hour or two for me to hit you back up. It's cool, bro. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. That your type of business, somebody could wait.
But they don't. And they don't act like they can't. And it's because of the instantaneousness of just like everything in the world, Instagram, tweets, just fucking everything, everybody just automatically assumes that you need to answer within 5 seconds. And I'm pretty good. If my phone's in my hand, generally I answer people right when I see a message come through. I don't play games. I don't see a message and then just like, I'll let them wait for an hour or I'll do this, I'll do that. But the dissociation and separation of home and state type of situation, I need to be able to just like separate that life from there's my business, this is this. And that was the first step was Roslyn. The first step was Roslyn getting an office. I did the podcast with Panetti.
How long were you there for?
Oh my God. I signed my lease in August of 2019 and then fucking COVID.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so that felt like I was there forever. So I was there from 2019 up until
4 years.
Yeah. Up until last month.
Basically 4 years.
Yeah. And then from last month, I was looking for spaces near me and this and that. And then this presented itself and it was, you never came to my first office. This office is almost double the size of my old office.
Okay.
It's a little over double the size. So we made it look good on the video. You know, you couldn't really tell how small it was. It was pretty fucking small.
Size doesn't matter.
Oh shit. It's not what she said, but
no, just like as if you look at my old videos, like I said, the garage, then the you probably didn't get to the part of the story. You're probably wondering how I transitioned from the garage to the next space.
Well, you said the warehouse was the next space.
Yeah, so
the warehouse was the next space. But I mean, in summing up what I'm saying, in summing up what I was kind of getting to, it's just like the progressive jumps into like now this is the new space. Now I can breathe a little bit. I've made it more convenient for myself to be able to do podcasts on a whim and to be able to come in and see people and push the mics aside and be able to like content strategize and plan.
Definitely an amazing accomplishment. Something
little by little. But you know what's saying?
You got to make that the next jump.
And saying to you, talking about jumps, it's like going from the garage to the warehouse to where you're currently at. It's like at first you couldn't think about spending the money on rent or getting storefront and this and that, but it's almost like a fish in the pond. Like you're only going to grow as big as that pond's going to let you. And then you have to kind of put yourself in the elements and get out there and make yourself uncomfortable. And okay, the overhead's an extra $500 a month. Oh, it sucks. I don't want to spend it, but I'll make more. Like I'll be able to just continually make more money and get more opportunities. And you have to trust that the process is bringing you to where you're at.
Yeah.
So how'd you get the warehouse?
Well, the interesting thing was, again, I was scared to make that jump.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to leave the garage.
I understand why. It's tough.
Yeah, but I was kind of forced out of it because we decided to sell that house.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I was literally, I never planned on moving out of that space. I, you know, even though it was tough mentally, I was ready to just keep doing it because, you know, obviously it mitigated the risk. So what happened was one of the, you know, people that were coming in for therapy lived like two blocks away. You know, I would pass his house all the time, like driving my kids to school or just going up and down the block or whatever. I was like, oh, he was coming. I was like, oh, your house is really nice. He's like, oh, you like it? I was like, yeah, I mean, from the outside, it looks really nice. He's like, oh, because we're selling it. I was like, oh, that's interesting. He's like, why don't you take a look? I was like, oh, well, I said, you know, probably out of my price range. And, you know, I have the office here. It'd be hard to really leave. And Bob was like, he's like, why don't you guys just come take a look? So, you know, my wife and I, we go over there, we look. And then he just was like, well, how much you want for it? So, he, you know, he makes a number to me. And I said, you know, I think we got to try to make this happen. I don't want to miss this opportunity because we always wanted to upgrade to a, you know, bigger space. Seemed like it would be very difficult to do. But like now this guy just presented me a complete monkey wrench of an opportunity. And I was like, all right, yeah, I think I'd like to make that work, but I would definitely, you know, I'd have to get the money out of my house, so I'd have to sell my house. So the whole thing was really a long shot. But my wife's like, let's just, you know, just post it on Facebook, see what happens. Post it on Facebook, boom. An hour later, somebody's like, we want to move to that neighborhood. We like, we need that size house that you have. Basically gave us...
So no realtor or anything like that?
Nothing.
That's beautiful.
No realtor.
No fees, nothing like that. That's great.
My wife's like, this person just basically asked... offered us our asking price for this house. I was like, oh shit, we gotta make this happen. She's like, I was like, wait, what am I gonna do about work?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, back at this situation again. And basically I was like, if this works out, I'm not gonna complain about like houses, because we had moved three times before that. So it was like my third house that we were buying. So moved, we just, everything fell into place and we moved. I thought about setting up a home office in the new house, out of that, turning that garage, you know, getting a split unit, getting everything set up nicely. But it was definitely adding up to a big expense. And then my brother had his warehouse down in Farmingdale. That's where I was originally doing the packaging out of. But then his best friend slash office manager, Mr. Habibs. Shout out to Mr. Habibs.
Shout out, Mr. Habibs.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever met him at the office.
Nope.
But he was in the old spot. A lot of the OG patients, clients will picture him. You walk in, he's sitting there, you know, vaping in his office. He's like, guys, I found this spot in Hicksville. You know, we could do everything out of there. We could do the shipping. You know, it's got two giant garage doors. Used to be a florist. And then they even got you go up a few steps in the back. That's where they had the florista offices. You could utilize that space for, you know, do your PT there. I was like, I don't know. That sounds weird, to be honest with you. I went over, my wife and I looked at the space. They ended up taking the space anyway before I moved houses. So they started shipping out of there. I was still working in my garage until the last day of moving. And I went over there and my wife, I'm like, what am I going to do? We started looking at some, you know, storefronts to rent.
Expensive.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is not an option because I'd be paying way more than I'm even bringing in right now. So.
Yep.
Again, back to the rat race with the bills. You know, that's just being in debt, not really, you know, an option I wanted to go into. So I was like, I went over to that warehouse. I looked around. I said, I don't think this is going to work. Then my wife's like, hold on, let me. She's like, I don't think it's going to be tough to out, you know, build a garage office again. Let me go look at that space with you. So this place, we walk in, you know, it's an absolute shithole. It's like shit everywhere. Mr. Habib's had his mom's couches right when you walked in.
Fire.
It was just boxes everywhere, junk everywhere, holes in the wall. You walk back to the offices, the ceiling's caving in, holes in the wall, everything just falling apart. And I was like, you see, it's not good. She's like, hold on. We've done this before with the garage. We could do it again. She's like, I know you can make this work. And basically, you know, that weekend, 4 a.m., went over there all day, you know, till midnight, cleaning up, moving shit in, getting stuff ready to make an office the whole weekend. Basically, by that Monday, I transitioned all the people that were coming to the garage. I moved houses one weekend. Next weekend, I moved the office and had everybody set up coming in that Monday. And, you know, to her credit, which I never thought, you know, she always reminds me, it was her idea. We were able to make it work.
That's good.
And then, you know, I ended up having, you know, Daryl Strawberry came in for PT.
That's cool.
So I'm going from a place where I never even thought I could do PT out of to like having my all-time favorite baseball player growing up as a kid coming in for PT for his feet.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was like, it's just a surreal experience for me. Had some other, you know, high-level athletes, basketball players, college football players, all come into this space. And again, similar situation where I'm like, you know, it was also next to an underground poker club. So like literally the door where our door was, it also constantly smelled like weed.
Oh, shit.
So people would walk in. You'd have to walk through the warehouse. Again, Mr. Habib's had his office boxes. You know, we tried to keep that clean, but it was definitely an experience. I was like, I don't know, you know, how people are going to receive this. So the first week I'm working there, you know, somebody makes a statement to me. This is like underground PT. This is like the coolest place I've ever been to. I was like, you serious? Like, yeah, I really, really love it here. It's like a great space, great vibe. You kind of just chill. I had a couch with a TV and, you know, people just hanging out. And then, yeah, just something that I didn't think was going to work out, worked out.
It's awesome.
And then I was still there by myself for, you know, quite a while. And then I connected with Tom Flynn. You know Tom from the gym?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you do.
Yep.
Everybody does.
Yeah, I know Tom.
Great kid. He was coming in for his neck. He was still in school, you know, getting ready to do finance and get a job for himself at some point. And he's like, Scott, would you want some help here as, you know, while I'm in school? And I, you know, I'm really, you know, like what you're doing here. I'm into fitness. You could, you know, train people in the little gym area we had. I was like, yeah, sure. So brought him on as my first ever employee.
Nice.
You know, super blessed to be connected with Tom. Great kid, great family. Shout out to Sophie also. And yeah, just kind of spiraled from there. And then still only had one table in that room. But then I was able to squeeze in, you know, four tables. We ended up getting you know, a student there. And then brought in another PT just because I couldn't do all the work myself. This way, you know, open up more time slots. And then, you know, we were there for a few years. A lot of trials and tribulations there. Some, you know, some, it was a kind of weird, you know, it's a weird space. You were never there, but, nope. You know, Jamal could probably tell you more about it. I mean, the bathroom, I would say would equate to like a prison style bathroom.
Nice. Yeah. Love those.
Yeah. It was just,
Love those. You got to keep looking over your shoulder while you're going to the bathroom.
It's still, you know, like I mentioned, you know, people loved it. They had positive things to say. There was every once in a while, you know, we stayed there during COVID, obviously. Some lady, I remember one time, you know, walked in with a mask on, saw like all of us in a tight space. You know,
freaked out.
Just like, I got to get the fuck out of here. What the fuck is going on in this place?
this is the new influenza creeping den.
Yeah, and it used to be an Indian florist. So it had a giant sign that said Florista on the door, on top of the door, like a big light up sign. So I used to have to tell people, okay, when you come, go to the red door under the florist sign.
Sick.
Yeah. They're like, so most people would find it generally, you know, if you had half a brain, you could figure out, okay, it's the red door, giant florist sign, like we explained. But people would still not find it. They would get lost. So there was a handful of people that just never made it in.
Never made it.
They had appointments. Yep. I used to send Dan. Then Dan started working for me. You just send him out. I used to like literally have his sole job was to clean up the warehouse and find new people. Like he'd be like outside, they'd be like rolling the window down, and he's like, "Are you looking for the PT?" He's like, "You coming through here?"
Should have hired him to like stand outside with the sign, like spinning it.
Yeah,
I should have been like, "Right this way." Right
yeah, basically.
This way.
So he would bring people in so they wouldn't get lost, and then you know, other, you know, people would walk in, make jokes like, "Oh, it's like," because it would smell like really backwoods, you know, marijuana, you know, strong scent. Like, "Oh, it's pretty cool. You having can I get some before we start the session?" I'm like, it's not me.
That's the blue door. Yeah, go through there.
It's the poker room. Then you'd have the girls going into the poker room. So they'd be like, oh, what's going on over there? Like, it's just the, you know, the poker girls that they massage you for like a minute. But then some of the poker guys started coming in. They would always invite me to play, but that's not my thing.
Let me ask you on the PT side. Let me ask you. So some of the stuff that you deal with, obviously, with Darryl Strawberry, all the athletes that you work with, what are some of the most common things that you see injury-wise, and what's the best route of rehab that you get to work with them on?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, considering, you know, I know what you're into right now, going to Sarah's and jiu-jitsu, I'd probably say...
My neck is getting beat up over there.
That's what I was going to say. So almost every MMA, you know, athlete or MMA, whatever you want to call you guys, always have neck tightness just from the constant grabbing, the twisting, neck shoulder. So even if an MMA guy comes in, they're like, oh, it's, you know, my hip flexors, hurts the kick, which is very common. I'm like, I know you got neck pain also. I'm going to incorporate the neck treatment into the session. They're like, oh, you could do that? I'm like, yeah, you know, we got to work on everything. Got to work on what you need. So, you know, Zach was in this morning. He comes every week. Obviously, you know Zach, right?
Yeah. And yeah. Beethoven comes through.
Yeah.
Beethoven comes through. I know you got, like you said, you had Aljo. You had Steamroller come in. He's got his fight coming up this week.
Steamroller and Nas. Shout out to Steamroller.
Yep.
Big body Steam, my guy. You know, definitely one of my favorite fighters to work with. So pumped to watch him at the Garden.
So now him getting ready for a fight, what are some of the things that you just did? Is it overall maintenance just to keep everything loose? Is it?
Yeah, we actually have a video on that dropping soon, but that's I can't. You know, I promise Nick, we can't release that yet.
That's all right, don't release it.
But yeah, there's a lot of pretty much. You know, I don't want to give too much information specific to his injuries, but
oh no, you don't have to talk about his injuries. No. Yeah, I'm just asking. Like, is it just making sure that they stay all loose everywhere?
Yeah, there's a few few setbacks here and there.
Yeah.
But
just like any athlete, everybody's got tweaks, and no athlete I've ever known goes into something 100%. I feel like everybody has something that's bothering them here and there.
Yeah, big body Steam. You know, he's coming in basically, you know, for camp. He comes in basically every other day.
That's awesome.
And you know, whether it's working on his hamstrings, his back, his neck, his posterior shoulders, his hip flexors. His ankles.
You just want to make sure that you get everything, though. You have to. You have to because these types of camps and these types of lifestyles, they beat on you over the course of X amount of weeks, especially getting ready for a fight. Because you have to. You can't really pull back the entire time. You got to go at an intense pace because you're going to be going 110% in the ring.
Yeah,
in the cage.
And I mean, I kind of just fell into working with these fighters, and it's, I wouldn't say probably, it's definitely my most favorite thing that I enjoy doing. And you know, I'll give you an example. Pombos, the Ferocious, first UFC, he trains at Law, out of Law.
Okay.
First pro UFC fighter from Cyprus.
Oh, cool.
So we were getting him ready for Contender Series to get that pro UFC contract. And Pombos is just a great guy. Like, you know, he's got a little bit of an accent. We always imitate him. We have a great time when he comes in the office. A lot of laughs, you know, especially when Nick is there. And, you know, we're having a good time working with him. And he's just getting ready, doing a lot of rehab work. Not rehab, a lot of, I would say, recovery maintenance work for that fight. He had some setbacks. He calls me one night, maybe like 3 weeks away from the fight, 4 weeks away from the fight. He's like, Scott. I'm like, what's up, Pamela? He's like, I broke my foot.
Oh.
Yeah. He's like, I went to the podiatrist or the doctor, I forgot who. He's like, you know, I broke my foot. I got a broken bone in my foot. I was like, oh, damn. I was like, what the f-? I was like, that really, because he was having some pain, but I just thought we could work around it. He's like, yeah, you know, you got him next time. He's like, the fuck are you talking about? I'm fighting anyway.
Yeah, he's still fighting. Fuck you.
Yeah.
He's still fighting.
So I'm like, all right, let's do this. Get you, do whatever we got to do to make sure that foot's ready. You know, we did a lot of different, obviously, manual therapy techniques. Different exercises to work around that broken bone. And
there's not much you can do with a foot anyway, right? What would they do? They'd normally just cast it?
In a boot,
okay.
Yeah, so they wanted him non-weight bearing. The doctor's like, you got to be non-weight bearing for, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. He's like, well, I'll do that after the fight.
Yeah, I'll deal with it afterwards.
So dude's a straight. So he's known for kicking people, trying to take the knee out. So we did a lot of work with him. He was feeling pretty good. I would probably say 75% going into the fight, despite the broken foot. You know, this is over the summer. We all get, you know, it's his fight night at the Contender Series. The guys all get together. I brought my kids to watch this fight for Pombos. He's fighting this kid, Babyface Killer, who, another fighter. I don't know, for some reason, Babyface Killer was favorite. But kid looked like a kid too. But Pablos is more like, he's 30, he's ready to go, he's more like a man. I'm like, why is this kid favored? I'm like, Pablos is our guy, he's ready to go. I don't care about the broken foot. Well, nobody knew about the broken foot except us. But we knew he likes to strike with his foot, go at the person. 30 seconds into the fight, he just starts laying some haymakers into this guy's face with his hands, knocks him out.
Didn't have to kick.
Yeah. We're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
All that work on his foot, he didn't even use it.
No, he didn't even need it. That was perfect.
I just need
to be able to stand. I got this.
We were all going crazy. We had we promised him we'd get some Greek food for the fight. We're eating our kebabs, our rice, souvlaki, whatever, gyro. And that was just like such a fun moment. We were wearing, Nick and I were wearing his shirt. And, I was just like thinking back. That was just, that's really what I love doing now.
Yeah.
And same with this Saturday, I get to watch Steamroller and Nas, take care of business and, pumped to see them.
Are they both on the main card? Nas on the main card?
Steam's the second fight on the main card.
I know Steam is on the main card.
Nas is going on, he's on the other card. He's going on like 8.
Okay, cool. That's awesome.
And then Dennis Bazooka also trains out of law.
I don't know a lot of the law guys. I mean, my main guy is John Beneducci, Manimal.
Okay, yeah.
He's coming on the show. I think he's on next week or the week after, but he's coming on. John's been, he's been dope, man, since I've been learning at Sarah's. And I went to law that one night. He invited me to go train there. And it's a cool spot. It's a cool spot. I got to train with some good dudes that night. And I think that's been my favorite part about training in jiu-jitsu. It's everybody's styles, everybody's different, and being able to like actually go to different gyms and just like, oh shit, like they do things way different at this spot. Even though it's like Cerro Longo, Law's gym is very different than what I do at Sarah's. It's cool. I like it.
It's a pretty awesome sport. And we're probably going to, we spent some days working out of the Law gym. Probably going to do that again around, Christmas time.
That's awesome.
For the holidays. Just got to, figure out that date on that. And just the fact that now I'm working with these fighters and, get to see them in action. It's really, really quite incredible. And I think that's what I enjoy the most out of everything I do.
Yeah, think about other PT guys in your position that don't evolve or don't network or aren't able to get out there and get the clients that they really want. Not because they can't, but because they just don't take the time to cultivate those relationships.
Yeah.
And start working towards the sports that they want to work in. So they get, like we said earlier, just those accident patients, just the round robin of just here we go and oh, your neck hurts, oh, whiplash again and stuff like that.
These people would not go work with me out of the offices that I was working at.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't even, it'd be pointless for them to go there.
Yep.
And because I wouldn't have the time to spend with them.
Yeah. So you've upgraded into the position that you've always wanted to be in, whether you knew that consciously or subconsciously, you've gotten yourself to that position that you're in now.
Looking back, just evolved into that. And, like you just said, a lot of the young PTs, I get messages on Instagram, sometimes, hey, I follow your page. Love seeing, what you do, the hands-on work. How do I get to work with fighters or these athletes like you work with? And what kind of advice could you give me? And honestly, I don't even know because I don't know what advice I'd give myself. I kind of just steamrolled into that situation of just doing a good job with everybody and, taking advantage of opportunities.
Yeah, your reputation. If you're in a specific place that, you have some of the athletes that you want to work with, networking. Networking is huge.
Yeah.
I've never run ads on my business. It's not a flex. It's not anything. It's just kind of, I've never really taken the time to make a highlight reel of all of my videos that I've done and this and that. It's just my business has been all word of mouth. And because of it, I've been able to get clients like Rain, clients like the BBC when I first started working with them, shooting some doc stuff. Like I've been able to work with some amazing people and companies. And I attribute all of it to the ability to, this client was super happy with the success rate that we had on the campaign that we ran. They told other people
word of mouth. That's
so important. So
that's
your reputation, your networking. These are things that will get you to the piece that you want to get to, but you have to take the time to cultivate all of that as time goes on.
Yep. If you're in a business and you're not getting word of mouth referrals, you better change something or
change
do something
else. Yeah, change it up, man.
Because that's, again, garage and what I used to do at the warehouse was all word of mouth.
Yeah.
There'd be no other way to find us.
Yeah. The underground PT.
Yeah. That's people. And then, believe it or not, when I was, decided to finally, which I had to move out of that space because for a lot of different reasons of, different issues there with the landlord and things falling apart, I had to move out of there. By the end, I really, really had to go. And also because we were busting at the seams. I had like four treatment tables. And I mean, the room, I would say, was almost narrow. Definitely, I think, a little narrower than this. Probably if you want to get rid of that window. They're like 10 feet wide. So we had like four tables like just on top of each other.
Yeah. Just
two people sitting on the couch.
Yeah, it's tough.
It was like, I mean, at one point, I set up a table and by the boxes in the warehouse just working on people there. I was like, this is getting insane.
Well, once again, you outgrew your pond again. So it's not time to upgrade.
Yeah, and then I lost my train of thought, but anyway, yeah, I had to get out of the warehouse, and then somehow, got to thank my wife. I know she said she wants to listen to the podcast.
Shouts to wifey.
Yeah, shouts to Steph. I had to get out of the warehouse. I knew I had to do it at some point, but again, back to the same theme, I was a little hesitant, a little scared to take on, I was looking at places to lease. Now I really was looking. I was like, came very close to signing a storefront lease. You know what TCBY is in the,
yep,
in Plainview? Because yep. I know you grew up in Plainview.
Yep. Dr. Bewell space.
I looked at that and I looked at the other end.
Oh, around the corner by the deli?
Yep. That's Brian Liu's deli. That's actually a good spot.
Yeah. It used to be, what was it called?
It was an old deli. Now it's called Brian Liu's Sandwich Express.
It was Sandwich Express. That's what it was used
to
be called.
But now it's Brian Liu's Sandwich.
Gotcha.
This guy makes some monster sandwiches.
Fire. I need to go there.
Somebody actually got us a gift card there a couple weeks ago, so we were getting some food from there. But anyway, it was either, okay, you want to take this end, it's now a karate place, or the Dr. Bewell spot. The Dr. Bewell spot was the right size, but it had a kitchen in the back.
Yeah, you didn't need it.
So I was like, unfortunately, I'm not paying extra.
That's what I was going to say. You're going to pay extra for that.
I like to eat. Maybe I could have brought in, Empire Nutrition and do some cooking back there.
That'd be cool.
Love those guys. But and then the other spot was not that big, still bigger than what I had. But I'm like, I can't sign a lease and then outgrow the space.
Yeah, within a half a year.
Yeah, it would just be, I don't want to be tight again. I'm tired of being in the tight space.
That's why I got this, man. I was originally going to get the one across the street, and I was across the hall. That thing was like four times the size of this, but I was like, I would have had a separate area for the podcast, a separate office. Like, it would have been way too big, and then it would have been another $800 a month. I said, you know what? I'm good on this right now. I'll sit here for a little while, and then I'll upgrade again.
Plus, I didn't like the idea of being in a medical plaza with other, like, just not the vibe that I want to have for our, what we do. No offense, you got this is kind of medical plaza.
It's okay.
But yeah, I mean, it works for you. You're in here.
Yeah, I'm chilling, man. I'm going to put some sound panels up soon. I ordered some. They come next month. Replacing some of these ceiling tiles, putting some sound panels on the wall. Everything's going to be great.
Yeah. So, and the cost of those places, just like, I remember the landlord, I was trying to negotiate the rent a little bit. I'm like, all right, I'll pay this amount you want, but you got to at least, fix this whole... Take down, it was the clothing store. So you got to take down the wardrobe walls because I don't need that. He's like, no.
Yeah. No, it's as is. As is. That's what they say. They love saying that shit.
Yeah. As is. I was like, so now I got to, you want like first month, last month.
Yeah.
You basically want me to give you like $20,000-$30,000.
Yep.
And you can't even fix a fucking hole in the wall?
Nope. They can't. I dealt with that with a couple of guys in town too. I was like, you need to take the glue off the wall from the last guy and this and that, blah, blah, blah. Oh, it's as is. But we'll give you 2 months free rent. I go, why don't you take that 2 months free rent and just fix what the fuck I asked you to fix? I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid. I have no idea. Maybe I just don't understand what's going on. But that seems like it's not going to take that much money to fix these things. I actually will make out better if I take the free month's rent, but I'd rather just not even deal with it. Just you deal with these problems. And then the funny thing is, one of the rooms was a recording studio. So there was a glass window to the next office that he's trying to sell as a separate office.
Yeah.
So I said, can you put a barrier up? He's like, we'll show the office and this and that. He's like, but then when the tenant eventually comes, then we'll put it up. I go, so like I could just be in the middle of a podcast and you and prospective clients are going to come in the other room showing them the room while I'm just sitting here. What am I, in a fucking aquarium? I go, dude, I'm good on this.
I don't get, why they like that. The place sat vacant for about a long time, and probably say a year or two before that karate place came in.
Yeah.
Maybe they got a better deal due to my negotiation, but, I told my wife, I was like, I got to get out of this warehouse at some point. She was like, you really need to move out from this warehouse, even though she was the one that gave me that confidence to get started there.
Oh, she knew it's time for the next jump. You're doing,
like,
your thing.
She would pop in to just like hear that, say hello. And, it was almost like a spot like she wouldn't even be comfortable bringing the kids to, between like the constant marijuana smell Mr. Khabib's vaping all the time, cherry vape going.
Yellow people that vape.
Yeah, just like a constant mess in that place. A lot of weird shit. There's always weird shit going on. There was the hawk eating the squirrel story day in front of the office. Jamal could tell you about that one. It was pretty funny. There's a lot of just weird stuff would go on. I was like, really, to really take this, you know, thing to the next level, I got to get out of the space. But, you know, again, I was nervous to make the jump because of the, you know, the cost factor.
But eventually you get settled in, you start making more money, and
yeah,
eventually you're going to be ready for the next jump.
Yeah, my wife, so again, thanks to my wife, we were looking at places. I was like, I don't want to rent in a building. I don't want to deal with this bullshit with the landlord. You know, fuck these guys with this, you know, your common expenses.
Yeah,
and
yeah. All your that. Share of the electricity, yeah, which doesn't even make any
fucking expensive.
Sense.
Like,
okay, cool.
How am I going to do the PT I want to do it, not get so just a high volume, but have these crazy expenses? It's not. I don't see how it's going to work. You know, God bless anybody, how they do it, I don't know, but I guess they do it. But I was like, I got to find a different option. So we started looking at places to buy. And right on the way to that warehouse was always this Gatsby's hair salon. And look kind of, you know, dingy from the outside. My wife's like, look, it's for sale. It's kind of a reasonable price. I think, you know, we might be able to swing this, you know, using, you know, maybe take a loan, like an SBA loan, it's called, small business loan. I was like, I don't know, the outside looks kind of small and dingy. She's like, could you just go take a look at it? Let's go take a look at it. So we looked at it, went in there. I was like, looks way better from the pictures on the inside than it did on the outside. This might be something, you know, we could make work. I knew it had some great potential. So it was a hair salon. There was, you know, the sinks, the hair stations. The ladies that owned it, I would say, didn't do much of an upgrade since the 90s. You know, again,
right?
Everything in that place was off-white or yellow. You know, mirrored walls, the fireplace that you see now, it was all mirror. A lot of stuff was falling apart, needed a lot of work. But I'm like, all right, this is probably good. I think, you know, the agent told me they just want to get out of this. They're tired of running their business here. They just went out. I was like, all right, let's make an offer and, you know, make this work. So I basically made the offer. They took it. You know, worked in some different negotiations with taking the sinks out. They didn't want to take the sinks out. They just wanted it out. So, I mean, that was a lot of back and forth and negotiations, but somehow, you know, this place just happened to come up for sale at this right time for me.
That's the whole motto of the episode. It's just things present themselves when they need to be.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy how it works out. Things just always work out.
Yeah. There's way more parts to the story, but I looked at another place in Plainview on Southwest Bay Road. I know they have all those medical plazas there,
yeah.
Little medical houses. This one, I literally had the contract to buy this place. It was probably about $250,000 more, so it was way more money. And I went to do the inspection with the inspector, went upstairs, and there was people living up there, so I was going to rent the top out, use the main level for the PT, and they just got really angry with looking at it. They did not want to let the inspector in to do the you know, inspection on the house. I said, how could I buy this place when I can't even look at it? And they started yelling at us, and it was a whole thing. It was, you know, they were getting a fight with the inspector.
Yeah, have a good one.
So it was like,
peace.
I was like, the energy in this place is way off. I was always didn't love the vibe, but I almost, you know, I really almost signed that contract. I didn't sign that contract, and literally, that's like a week later is when the hair salon place came up. That was right around the corner.
Insane.
It was pretty, and just unbelievable coincidence. So this place was less money, way better space, and I knew it would just work way better. You know, obviously, I purchased the building. You know, how I got that down payment was just grinding it out from. You know,
yeah,
being years at the warehouse.
Years of doing your thing, man.
Years at the garage. So it all, it's like you could hit like, you know, fast forward button. It took me all through that time, yep. like a blink of an eye. And now, like, you know, I'm at that space and finally feel content with what I'm doing.
It's awesome.
We do get tight in there at times. It gets busy. But I don't know if I want to be on to the next thing. Now I'm just really...
Yeah, just enjoy where you're at.
I really enjoy
the stages of the business.
Yeah, we say, you know, I work to live, not live to work. So... I don't need to have a, you know, giant, you know, everybody's like, why don't you franchise this thing? It's a really unique, you know, experience, this and that. You know, Josh York, shout out to Josh.
But then it takes the uniqueness out of it if you start franchising it. Everyone's doing it.
I was like, I'm just content right now.
Yeah.
If feel like, you know, got everything I needed. It's a good feeling. It took a long time to get there, just like the sign says. Yes. But, you know, definitely pretty content. I mean, I got to thank the guys for, you know, couldn't do it all myself. Rob, Nick, bringing him on board, definitely helped expand the niche we have with the fighters. Basil, Dan, all these guys now have been with me for years, and you know, all helped me to you know, we kind of work together to make a great experience for people.
Yeah,
that's ultimately the goal.
So let me ask you this, because I know you're a busy man, and we've been at this for almost 2 hours. Let me ask you this. So, two questions to wrap. Do you think that there's any misconceptions in the field of PT work?
Yeah, a lot of misconceptions.
What would be like the main three, just to bullet point them and just speak on it?
Well, speaking in terms, you know, PT is a very broad field. You could work in the hospital, you could do what I do. So I'll speak on in terms of what we do with the outpatient population, orthopedic world. You know, like we discussed before, people think, oh, I go to PT, I'm going to get heat, stim, I'm going to spend 5 minutes with a therapist, I'm going to get ultrasound, which is bullshit, I'm going to get some, you know, banded exercises and maybe a quick stretch. That is, if that's what you've had done, you have not had true hands-on, you know, physical therapy. That's what we specialize in. That's what we like to do. That's what we're best at. You know, if you want to go somewhere else and just exercise, you know, then we're not the right office for you.
Yeah.
You know, we like getting our hands on people, you know, seeing how they respond to that therapy. So I think there's a misconception that, you know, physical therapists don't always do that type of work, because a lot of people have been to physical therapy but haven't experienced that.
Gotcha.
I think that's, at least from, you know, my personal view, that's the number one misconception that I'm always explaining to new you know, customers when they're like, oh, I heard you're the best, but I've been to PT. PT was a waste of time. I was like, well, what'd you do? Well, did some band exercises.
Yeah.
The therapist rubbed my, you know, shoulder for a few minutes, and then they stretched me, and then I got, you know, the stimulation. I was like, well, okay, you really didn't have true physical therapy. You know, just come in and, you know, we could see a different experience.
Cool. And what's one takeaway for listeners that you wish you knew way back when? It could be life. It could be the gym. It could be anything.
I'd probably say, you know, if you have listened to this whole episode, sounds like it went on pretty long, but, you know, I appreciate okay. You
listening. People listen in and out.
Yeah, appreciate you listening. And I'll kind of keep it to the topic of the sign about no great thing is created suddenly. You know, just putting the work in if you want to create something. It takes time. And the number one takeaway would be, you know, I'm 41 now, and that whole journey from 21 to 41, you know, although it was great, went like super fast. And, you know, I'm nervous that 41, 61 is going to go even faster. But now I just want things to slow down. Like I said, I kind of have everything, you know, not sound too like arrogant or whatever, but I just feel like I have everything I need.
That doesn't sound arrogant. It sounds like you're content.
I'm very content, yeah. Family-wise, got everything I need with my wife, my kids. You know, professionally, got everything. I'm happy with the people I work with. I would say if you get to the point of your work, especially in your 20s or 30s, and you're just grinding day in and day out, and you're just not enjoying what you're doing, you know, now is the time to make the change. You know, you don't. When are you going to make the changes? When you're 40, 50, you're dead. And then if you have goals, now's the time to do it. You know, I could have waited to get the new place or move on to the next thing, but when am I going to do that when I'm dead? You know, I have some other goals in mind now that, again, I'm content, but some other things I want to try to work on, you know, move on to maybe the next goal, but I don't feel like I have to do it. But again, if I want to do that, now's the time. Can't wait till what am I going to do when I'm dead?
Can't do it when you're dead.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
So, and again, you know, take some risks. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Nothing. Especially if you have a good support staff, support team around you, then there's really nothing to worry about.
I love that. I want to thank you for coming and chopping it up with me and hanging out, because you are the man. And I know you're a busy man. And I know you want to go see Marina, and you got to get back doing your thing and see your kids. Yes. As well. How can people contact you if they've watched and they want to, consider coming to you for a treatment, or just reach out to you and see, you know, if they're having some questions about getting work done? How can they reach you? You can address them directly to the camera.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Appreciate you having me on, and anybody that's listened to this point about my personal journey, especially in the PT world, thanks for listening. But the best way to reach me you could either call the office 516-935-0814. You can send me a message on Instagram, @thesavagephysiodoc. Feel free to reach out, ask me any questions you have. There's no pressure to come in. I really do love what I do. I like hearing from people, seeing what's going on with them, whatever injury that may be. And then if you come in to see us, the goal is to give you the best experience possible. That's just from day one how I've been doing it, and that's never going to change.
Cool. Listen, Doc, I appreciate you. And everybody that listened, I hope you got all the little gems out of this, especially the sign, no great thing is created suddenly. And that's going to be the theme of the episode, especially. So any questions, hit the doc up. Definitely go see him for treatment if you're in the area and you're feeling a little off. They'll definitely help you out. They've put me back together multiple times, and I always appreciate it when something happens and I call them up. I'm like, oh, I think I fucked something up.
Yep.
I need some help. So you guys are always amazing, and I appreciate y'all. And big episode 74. Make sure you share, like, comment, subscribe. It helps the algorithm. It helps the channel grow. It helps me continue to have amazing guests like Dr. Scott come in, chop it up with me, take the time to talk about their journey, because I know that his journey definitely can help somebody else along the line of their journey. So on that note, peace.